net zero lunacy, as some have decided describing it, has added £187 now. It's going completely in the other direction. We'll give you more details on that. Has SEND gone round the bend? Special educational needs and disabilities. A report says it's out of control. Author Kat Brown has ADHD.
There's certainly been a significant rise in the number of people seeking out diagnoses. A lot of that is simply due to the pandemic really having taken away a lot of coping mechanism.
Get ready for solar panel post boxes. How exactly will they work? Parents will save thousands of the government cost of living support. You'll hear from the relevant minister. And from Cleethorpes to Gleethorpes.
Manchester United might be a big fish, but they are used to dealing with those around here. Grimsby Town have reeled them in.
The mighty minnows of Grimsby slay Manchester United. All starts after the news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, a shooting at a school in Minneapolis is being investigated by the FBI as an anti-Catholic hate crime. Two children, aged 8 and 10, were killed and 17 other people were injured in the attack yesterday morning. The 23-year-old shooter died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. 10-year-old Weston Halsner was one of the survivors of the shooting.
The first one, I was like, what is that? I thought it was just something. Then I heard it again. I just ran under the pew. And then I covered my head. My friend Victor, saved me, though, because he laid on top of me, but he got hit.
A report has found more than 280,000 crimes went unrecorded by police in England and Wales last year. The HMIC watchdog has praised an increase in recording to nearly 95% of offences, but it's warned forces are still falling short when it comes to domestic abuse and crimes classed as antisocial behaviour. Landlords could face a tax hike in Rachel Reeves' budget this autumn. Treasury officials are reportedly looking at levying national insurance on rental income to raise about £2 billion. Victoria Scholar is from Interactive Investor.
There's a £40 billion fiscal black hole that she's trying to plug. Essentially, the government just doesn't have enough money. So it's clearly going to be looking at lots of different ways to try and increase taxes while causing minimal pain. And I think there's going to be lots and lots of rumours and speculation between now and the autumn budget.
The Treasury says it's committed to keeping taxes for working people as low as possible. Sir Tony Blair has joined a meeting with Donald Trump to discuss the future of Gaza. The former Prime Minister is said to have briefed the President on ideas to rebuild the Palestinian territory. Sir Tony served as Middle East envoy from 2007 to 2015. Manchester United manager Ruben Amorim has apologised after his team was stunned by Grimsby in the EFL Cup. They fought back to draw 2-2 in normal time last night before losing to their League Two opponents, 12-11 on penalties. Amorim told Sky Sports that United fell well short.
I know that the best team won, the only team that was on the pitch. The best players lose because one team can win against any group of players. And I think that the team and the players spoke really loud today.
Grimsby will play Sheffield Wednesday in the third round of the competition. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 92.55 after closing down 10 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 16. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many. The rain will be heavy and thundery at times with the possibility of some hail. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mom!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 4 minutes after seven. Thursday, the 28th of August. In this hour, the government's promise over wind farm, the church saving of around £300, goes up, it would appear, in a puff of smoke. Ed Miliband now standing accused of misleading the electorate. Do his sums add up? We'll have a full report in just a few moments' time. Plus, slaughtered as they pray, the horror in Minneapolis. Jacob Frey is the mayor. He said at a news conference yesterday,
it was the first week of school. They were in a church. These are kids that should be learning with their friends. They should be playing on the playground.
Back in the UK,
the Home Office and the owners of the Bell Hotel are appealing the High Court's decision to impose an interim injunction on the housing of asylum seekers. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma with the details.
In the world of business, is there nothing lower that the airline Ryanair will not stoop? Now their staff has had a raise in bonuses for spotting people with oversized bag. Boss Michael O'Leary.
I mean, the amount of chancers that go, or who are chancing there, I mean, I've been up there doing the boardings myself in Dublin. People come with rucksacks. Like, they're not getting on with a rucksack. Check it in, you're not getting on.
And in the world of sport, Grimsby Town slay Manchester United. It used to be glory, glory Man United. Now it's what's the story, story Man United.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As was revealed around at this time yesterday, the cost of switching off wind farms has been blamed for pushing up household energy bills by around £15 a year. The news will come as a blow to Ed Miliband, the Energy Secretary. Now, he promised to cut household energy bills by £300 a year. The reality is that the price cap announced yesterday will add a £187 additional amount for the average price, the average charge. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, joins me now with the full story. Natasha, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. And as you said, Ed Miliband before the election promised our bills were going to get cheaper, not more expensive. And just a few months ago, you challenged the Energy Secretary on why, as under his watch, our bills are going up under this government, not down.
Why should my listeners believe a word you say?
Because we've got a long-term plan for 2030.
But you've got it the wrong way around, Mr. Miliband. The bills are going up.
Clean homegrown power to cut bills by up to £300. Here's why bills have gone up. Because of our dependence on fossil fuels. And here's the thing, Nick. Every solar panel we put up, every wind turbine, I know you're not a great fan of them, wind turbines, every wind turbine we erect, every piece of grid we build makes us more secure and gives us that clean homegrown energy. There is only one answer to get off that dependence, to get off that roller coaster, and that is the clean power mission of the government. And maybe it will even convert you to wind turbines.
And you still nail your colours to the mast of that £300 cut.
Absolutely. Up to £300 by 2030. It's what we said at the election, and we continue to stand by it.
I will be holding him personally to account on that, Nick, because I'm just not sure if it's going to happen. So yesterday, Ofgem announced that the price cap was going up yet again. Now, it's around £35 a year for the average household. The figure that you just referenced is the amount that the price cap has gone up in the last sort of year or so under the Labour government. So it has gone up from around sort of £1,500 to around sort of £1,700. So when you look at it, around 2% increase for families, which is going to kick in around October. But actually, when you dig into the details of this, the wholesale costs have gone actually down in the last couple of months. So why is this happening? Now, there was one man who came to the UK over the summer who thinks he knows why.
You look at the UK, what's happened at UK, they have energy costs have gone through the roof because of wind. They want to do everything, close up the northern parts of the country. They have oil that's tremendous. And they close it up and they've been building windmills all over the place. And I tell them, you're my friends, but man, you're going to have a bad awakening very soon. It's going to be very bad.
Now, what he meant was wind farms, of course, not windmills. But look, he is to an extent partly right. Now, according to Ofgem, these costs are being increased for two reasons. Because our bills are not made up of just the wholesale gas prices. It's, of course, taxes, other environmental obligations that we have to pay. However, these two reasons, Nick, are directly related to this Labour government. First, those wind farms. Now, a few years ago, when we were trying to incentivise firms to build more renewable wind farms, the government essentially promised to subsidise them if it wasn't windy enough, if they needed to be switched off. And today we are still doing so. And in part, when there is too much wind, we can't get that out of, say, Scotland. Basically, it's like a traffic jam on the grid. You can't get it around the country when you need it. It's a bottleneck. So the wind farms are then turned off if it's not able to be stored where it is. So, for example, if you've got a wind farm in Scotland, if you can't store it and you can't get it out, the
how
wind farms...
How do you store it? There's just great banks of storage.
Exactly, yes. Right. And it's obviously a lot harder to store them, and it's a lot harder to build storage facilities. But essentially, thanks to our ageing grid, the electricity electricity can't get out, we've not got enough storage facilities. The wind farms then turn off and the government pays these companies to do so to ensure that they don't lose money. But Nick, this is, according to Oxford Octopus Energy, they estimate that these subsidies so far in 2025 have cost us £815 million switching off wind turbines alone and paying gas plants
to switch them off, £815 million.
And for us to pay extra to get gas around the country in the areas where that electricity can't reach. It's absolutely crazy. It just doesn't work. But Nick, this is only going to get worse because we are building more wind farms, as Ed Miliband wants to, by 2030. He says that this is the way to get off fossil fuels and get on to more renewables. He says he wants to build more storage facilities and upgrade the grid too. But NESO predicts that without these massive grid investments, those costs could balloon to around £8 billion a year by 2030. So a lot of money potentially being spent on these subsidies. So the government could have done something differently here. They've chosen not to. Remember a couple of months ago, we were discussing the idea of zonal pricing.
Yeah.
Essentially, that would mean different prices in different parts of the country. And that wouldn't have solved the problem, but it would have gone some way to basically making different markets for our energy system. And one of the reasons why people say that energy is a lot cheaper in places like the US is because they have multiple energy markets. Now, the other reason bills are going up, Nick, is because of the government's decision to extend what's called the warm homes discount. They are doubling the number of people who will get this £150 off their energy bills. So that's good news for 2.5 million people on lower incomes. However, the rest of us are going to be paying for it. The government said yesterday wholesale gas prices remain high and Britain is paying a fossil fuel penalty. A spokesperson from Desnes says the only answer is for Britain to get off that roller coaster of high fossil fuel prices.
A comprehensive report, thank you, from Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, 11 minutes after 7. Now, listening to that is John in Bridlington. Now, I need to explain, because John has made his appearances in the later part of the show. For those of you not heard from John before, we first spoke with John a couple of months ago, I think it was in June, in a totally unrelated conversation about assisted dying. And John revealed that, sadly, he is not a healthy man. He's living in a sort of retirement, a care home, but he's a former economics lecturer. So I did say every opportunity I can, we would use him because I want to keep his mind stimulated. John, thank you for coming on. Work through these figures for us, would you? So gas prices are effectively down 25%, but the average bill now has gone up over the year by £187. Explain. Morning, John.
Hello, Nick, and congratulations on your marriage.
Thanks,
I was very pleased to hear that.
Thanks. She's a very lucky girl, John. This is absolutely true.
Well, yeah. She has my sympathy.
Well said.
Right.
Right, go through the... Come on, you're economic, you're a lecturer. Do the sums as the government are putting the formula, do they add up, John?
Well, you've got to go back a bit, Nick, and you've got to... history tells us an awful lot. And if you look back to the 1970s,
yep.
nuclear power was going to cut the price of electricity.
Yep.
If you look back to the baseload power stations on the Trent,
yep.
they were going to cut the price of electricity. North Sea oil was going to cut the price of electricity.
Yep.
And wind power is now that magic cure. And it's not going to happen because, as that lady said before me, it was a brilliant summary. The infrastructure which moves the electricity around the country is so ancient, it's in the wrong places, so you're paying people to produce power that we don't need, and you don't get the full benefits of the cheaper prices because you're subsidising power companies to produce power at times when it's not needed.
So as an economics expert, in opposition, the government promised it would be a £300 saving on our energy bills. That now has to be a £487 saving because you have to add 187. They're never going to get there, John.
Nope, they're not. Never going to get there. And they never were. I mean, it was... Politics is all about making promises and hoping people forget them. And, there's a case that, they hope by the next election we shall all have forgotten that. There'll be some other problem, and on they go. But they're all the same. They all make promises they can't keep. And, they shouldn't really make these promises. Poor Rachel Reeves should never, ever have said she's, not putting tax up, because it's the only way to solve the problems. And I was listening to your colleague before 7 o'clock who was talking to landlords about putting national insurance contributions on landlords. I mean, we've got to the state now where I think, they're scraping the barrel for taxes. that they can say don't affect working people. But of course they do, because you put up national insurance to landlords, they'll just pass it on.
Absolutely. It's not as if the tenants... OK, I've got to get to the news. Just check, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
Not good, I'm but, sorry. You know, it's just one of those things, isn't it? You know, you have to put up with the hand of cards that you dealt with.
Right.
And my hand's not a good one.
But you're going to stay with us? You'll talk to us again about economics, John?
In the near future, yes. And hopefully things might be happening thereafter, but that's another story.
What do you mean things might be happening thereafter? What does that mean?
Well, you know, there might be a chance to get to Switzerland.
You're looking at going to Dignitas?
Yes.
You've explored that?
Yes.
How far have you got?
Dear me. I never know, because they keep changing the rules. But it's looking more likely, put it like that.
When?
End of the month, end of September.
You might go to Switzerland in a month's time.
I might, hopefully, yes.
Family all on board with that?
Well, it's only my wife, and she's not on board, but she accepts that I'm getting worse, and, you know, the thing about Dignitas is you've got to be able to take the concoction yourself.
Yes.
At the moment, I can do.
Yes.
But I'm getting worse, I'm getting more dodgy, and things are packing in.
Right.
And,
just remind the listeners of the condition, lastly, you have, John.
MS. Primary progressive MS. Dreadful disease, it really is. And it's just one of the things you get dealt with. I've just been dealt with it.
But if you do go to Switzerland, who am I going to turn to for sage economic advice?
A politician. Get Mr. Ed Miliband on for sage economic advice.
Listen, will you call me next month? I can't believe I'm going to say this. Let's put it that way. Don't go to Switzerland without calling me. Is that a deal?
I will. No, I will definitely call you.
All right, sir. Well, that took a turn. John, thank you. John in Bridlington, our economics commentator. They're going out to follow that. Right, the promise to save £300. Now the reality, you'll have to save £487. All gone up in a puff of smoke. 7:16, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The FBI is investigating a shooting at a school in Minneapolis as an act of domestic terrorism and an anti-Catholic hate crime. A report found more than 280,000 offences went unrecorded by police in England and Wales last year. And the Treasury is said to be looking at a tax hike on landlords in the budget this autumn. LBC weather. Sunshine and scattered showers for many. It'll be heavy and thundery at times. A high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. These problems on the Underground do continue. There are severe delays on the Hammersmith and City and Circle lines and minor delays on the District line. Also severe delays on the Mildmay line for London Overground between Stratford and Richmond and also between Stratford and Clapham Junction. On the roads, there are queues on the M11 southbound to the North Circular Road from Junction 5 at Loughton. And that's because a car's broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. The A2 Old Kent Road remains closed in both directions between Bermondsey and Peckham, and that's because of an ongoing investigation. In West Dulwich, it's very busy on the South Circular Road westbound, and that's because of the roadworks outside Dulwich Common.
This is LBC.
Wow, Direct Line sorted my claim with a 5-year guarantee on the car repairs. That's how it's done. Imagine if that's how everything got done, like getting my kids to eat their greens.
Mummy, the vegetable van is here. Please can I have a broccoli pop? Or a courgetto? Please?
Go on then.
Direct Line. That's how it's done.
Valid whilst the car is yours. Must use approved repairers. Excludes poor maintenance, later damage, wear and tear.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
Tesco Finest Sugar Bell Tomatoes. The ultimate supporting act. Zinging up salads? or elevating fresh linguine. Perfect for when you want to be vined and dined. It's why only the finest varieties are hand-picked when perfectly ripe, to ensure our Sugar Bell tomatoes are exceptionally sweet. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in-store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, we're all still recovering from that news from John. What's the time? 7:20. John, I know you'll still be listening. The outpouring is extraordinary here. Michael Robson. John is a legend. Great to hear from him. Keep bringing him on for as long as he can. This comes from Helen. I'm in tears thinking about this brilliant man and going to Dignitas. Michael, give this man, John, some hope. It's sad we should be sending him off there. Well, we're not. It's his decision. Simon, bless his heart. Johnny, wow, that was a change of direction. He's a lovely sounding man. This is so sad. Pete H., John, don't do it. You're a legend. Paul Harmston, I'm blubbing here. Thank you for getting him back on. These go on and on, John. I could actually probably get all the way through to James Cleverly, just reading notes about you. So I must. Let's finish with one last one, which is another Simon. John is absolutely brilliant. Please, please, please get him on weekly. He's an asset to the airways. John, there's a lot of people campaigning not to allow you to get on that jet to Switzerland, and we will talk again. Let's find another way to speak to him in a week or so. Okay, headlines of the papers. And this is the front page news for at least two of them, as I recall. Yes, Daily Mail, wind farms hike your energy bill, which is pretty much the way I spelled it, I suppose. The Daily Express, OAPs pay the price for switch to wind farms. The story that John mentioned is the front page of the Times. Reeves eyes tax raid on landlords to raise £2 billion. And as John rightly said, the government are yet again nuts, because don't they realise that will simply be passed on to the tenants, who are the working people that the government, when in opposition, promised they would not go. And the Metro chronicles the continuing loss in good fortune for the government. From hero to Keir low, as in Sir Keir Starmer, only 20% would vote for PM's party. Year after election, Farage now in a double-digit lead. That is the reality. The LBC app has the story we're going to go to in just a moment, which is the horrific events in Minneapolis. The shooter who killed two children as they prayed. And as you heard on the LBC News Bulletin, it's being seen as a hate crime against Catholics or Catholicism. That is also on the front page, actually, of most of the websites. Although, let's try and pick another story. This one, here we are. This is on the front page of the Huff Post. And they're talking about how Farage has been, sorry, as in Nigel, Nigel Farage has been forced into a humiliating U-turn on his asylum plans. OK, Ashley's in Beaconsfield. Ashley, Ed Miliband, discuss. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Firstly, thoughts to John. He's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, God,
Ed Miliband. Ed Miliband needs to be removed from his position in government. He's costing us an absolute fortune with this wind farm madness and this climate change madness. The UK as a whole is less than 1% of the global issue, and we are being punished time and time again with rising costs.
Well, he would say, Ash, because I've challenged him, but Ashley, this is how we're going to get cheaper power in the future. Don't think about tomorrow, think about next week, is what he would say.
There isn't enough wind farm power unless we put wind farms on all of the sides of our country as an island to power us. It's absolute lunacy. And, you know, Natasha Clark has reported that, you know, that there's log jams with getting power from Scotland to the south, or even to the north if you live in the south. It's utter lunacy. And we are getting punished time and time again. Under the Tories, I paid £182, £186 per month to power my modest three-bedroom house. I've now just got a letter come through from my supplier, and it's going to be £260+ every single month. It's a real madness, and I don't even want to get started on getting rid of my car.
Okay, lastly, let me ask you, and we've spoken on a number of occasions, you're a very reasonable and rational bloke. Come on, what about the planet? What about the environmental aspect of what the government's trying to achieve?
They're trying to achieve something that's not possible because not everyone's on the same page. When China, Russia and America start taking proper precautions to move towards net zero, we should then do the same. But we are less than 1% of the global problem. We should just carry on as normal and try and make it life as bearable as we can without inflating costs. China, Russia, United States, even Australia to a point, they don't really care about it. So why should we? It's madness.
Ashley, good speaking with you as ever. Look after, have yourself a good day. 7:25. Let's go to events elsewhere. We go to the United States. Two children aged 8 and 10 were killed, 17 others injured in Minnesota after a gunman opened fire through church windows as students celebrated mass. The FBI says it's investigating the attack as an act of, quotes, domestic terrorism and, continuing quotes, a hate crime targeting Catholics. Now, Weston Halsnew was one of the pupils attending a start-of-term mass when the gunfire started.
The first one, I was like, what is that? I thought it was just something. Then when I heard it again, I just ran under the pew. And then I covered my head. My friend Victor, like, saved me, though, because he laid on top of me, but he got hit.
The school's principal, Matt DeBoer, spoke at a news conference yesterday afternoon.
We, as a community, have a responsibility to make sure that no child, no parent, no teacher ever has to experience what we've experienced today.
To Matthew Shoemaker, who's a U.S. intelligence and national security expert, joining me now. Matthew, what do we know about the shooter? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. Well, from what we can gather from court records and from eyewitnesses and those who knew the alleged shooter, the individual was about 23 years old or so, by the name of Robin Westman. He had changed his name when he was 17 from Robert, allegedly, according to the court documents, because he identified as female and wanted his name to reflect as such. So that is certainly playing a role in the discussion in America about this individual. And from there, the manifesto that he allegedly published was certainly, you know, for many of us that we assume that we are numb to this sort of thing in America at this point, you know, reading that manifesto as I have, it really shakes you even when you think that you're numb to it. So it is quite jarring more than anything, but it is certainly a very sick individual who did this, someone who is very disturbed.
Matthew, what has the political reaction been in the States?
To a certain extent, most on the right side of the political spectrum are focusing on the trans side of the debate with regards to this alleged shooter. On the left side, it is the discussion around the easy accessibility of firearms. All three of the firearms used were legally purchased by the shooter themselves, and that's what they used in committing this crime. So that's really where it's centered on right now more than anything.
The FBI says it will now investigate it as an act of domestic terrorism and a hate crime targeting Catholics. What does that investigation comprise then, lastly?
So that investigation itself is going to be going through the alleged shooter's manifestos more than anything, what the shooter did. They're going to construct a timeline with regards to when the firearms were purchased, who they purchased them from. They're going to conduct investigations, of course, with the next of kin. They're going to interview as many people as they possibly can and start to piece this together more than anything. Given that the alleged shooter has taken his own life at this event, this is only going to go so far more than anything, unless there are more crimes that were committed by others in terms of if something was sold to him that shouldn't have been sold or people knew of something and didn't report it. So that's kind of where we are at this point.
Grateful for your time, Matthew Shoemaker. Thank you. You're U.S. intelligence and national security expert. Just a little bit more of the background. As we've heard, there was a sort of manifesto which also featured a photograph of Adam Lanza. Now, to remind you, he was responsible for the 2012 Sandy Hook school shooting. That goes down as one of the deadliest in U.S. history. The shooter himself or herself, and I'm not being in any way glib there, but she identifies as a woman, although as we understand it, was still listed as being a male. The shooter, let's just say that, is from Minneapolis and attended the school. graduating in 2017 as a 15-year-old. This is according to a yearbook obtained by the broadcaster CNN. And the shooter's mother worked at the school as a parish secretary before retiring in 2021. The attacker was unable to gain access to the main building of the church as it was barricaded by members of the congregation, slaughtered as they prayed. Listen, there are many, many problems we have in the United Kingdom. But when you see that, at least we can usually send our children to schools with a degree of safety, and certainly not the idea of the shootings that seem rather commonplace across the water. Let's come back to the conversation here. The promise from Ed Miliband, which seems to be going up in smoke. Mike in Kings Langley. Miliband is the biggest windbag ever, all talk. Mark Kavanagh, what part of 2030 do you not understand? Well, I know that's what Mr. Miliband said, but that £300 promise is now £487, Mr. Kavanagh, and it's only going one way. What's your name? Louise in Lanarkshire. I heard on LBC part of the increased cost was to create a slush fund for those struggling with their bills. Why should I pay more to cover my own bill and part of someone else's? Yes, that's the £2.5 million that we talked about. All right, let's go to other matters. Coming up in the world of business, yet another incentive by Ryanair that makes me wonder why on earth anyone would fly with them. And in the world of sports... have been the glory days, but now after crashing out of the League Cup to Minnows Grimsby Town, it's more what's the story Man United. 7:30 breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news, Thomas Watts.
The FBI is investigating a shooting during mass at a school in Minneapolis as an act of domestic terrorism. Two children, aged 8 and 10, were killed and 17 other people were injured yesterday. A watchdog has found more than 280,000 crimes went unrecorded in England and Wales last year. His Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary says the logging of antisocial behaviour remains unacceptably low. The Treasury is reportedly considering a tax hike on landlords in the Chancellor's budget this autumn. Officials are said to be looking at bringing in national insurance payments on rental income. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many, the rain heavy and thundery at times with the possibility of hail, a high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Buying a home on a holiday park was a dream that became a nightmare. High pressure sales tactics, huge site fee increases and a loss of value have left many customers feeling misled, angry and trapped. But the Holiday Park Advice Centre can help. Contact us today and we'll help claim back any money you're owed on your holiday home. Text ASSIST to 78900 to get started.
Hello, Holiday Park Advice Centre.
That's ASSIST to 78900.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What?
Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist?
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Are the tasting notes gloom?
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury. Cadbury Bourneville, made to be enjoyed, not endured.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:33, back to our conversation about that net zero pledge and into the world of business. And before I introduce my friend and journalist Christian May, just hear a little bit from the CEO of Ryanair, Michael O'Leary. As usual, fairly robust.
If it fits, it gets on. If it doesn't fit, you'll get fined. They're not really trying. And they, you know, we don't fine you to get caught out by a centimetre. We fine the people whose bags are typically a foot or 2 feet bigger than the sizers. I mean, the amount of chancers that go or who are chancing there. I mean, I've been up there doing the boardings myself in Dublin. People come with rucksacks. Like, they're not getting on with a rucksack. Check it in. You're not getting on.
I cannot tell you how much I dislike Ryanair, but here's a little story for you. Here's a little story for you. This is talking about the way, and Christian will explain in a moment, how staff will be incentivised to effectively stop you. Many years ago, I was sent to somewhere in Spain by LBC to speak at a travel conference. and I flew out with Ryanair. And I phoned back to London and I said, I'm not coming back on that airline, OK? I don't care how you do it, I'm not coming back. And there was a young woman working within, I don't think it was even Global then, who was tasked with calming me down. Her name was Claire. Her name now is Claire Ferrari. That's how I met. So my fury with Ryanair actually led me to my wife. So there are some more joyful moments. Christian May gives us, editor-in-chief at City Ian, gives us the background to the story. Good morning, chuckling Christian. What is it then O'Leary's demanding now?
I'm just picturing the expense receipt of that helicopter that was sent to pick you up.
I think I was moved on to Iberia, if it still exists. I can't remember what it was. Anyway, what's he suggesting, Christian?
Well, he's reiterating their long-standing policy, which does appear stricter than other airlines, as to the size of the bag that you can take on without having paid around, I don't know, 40, 50 quid or so to take what you might consider a normal carry-on size bag onto your Ryanair flight. And he says that, look, we do have a policy whereby people at the gate who work for Ryanair will check the size of people's bags that they're trying to bring on, and if they don't fit the requirements, then they have to pay. And what's more, we're going to pay bonuses to our gate staff to try and catch these people out. Now, this is obviously infuriating to passengers. We've all got these stories. A couple of weeks ago, my family and I were flying back on a 10 p.m. flight from Toulouse on Ryanair, which ultimately took off at midnight. And I can tell you, of all the places to find yourself, 1:30 in the morning in Stansted immigration queue is not top of the list. And part of me thought, well, you know, you get what you pay for. This is a cheap airline. And I thought, hang on a minute. It wasn't cheap at all. It was thousands of pounds for the four of us to fly back. Look, he is unrepentant. He says, these are our rules. These are our prices. If you don't like it, you can lump it. He says, we're running a very efficient, very affordable, very low-cost airline, and we're not letting anybody get in the way of that.
But do you think it is low-cost, Christian? In all honesty, is it low-cost?
Well, not in August, it isn't. And not flying back from Toulouse. But, look, I mean, on the whole, yes. And, you know, the way they run this business is, they very much lean into the notion of, look, here's the deal. And of course, it does stick in the throat a bit when you think, well, hang on, this wasn't a 39 quid flight. No. This was 800 quid. Thank you very much. And what's going on? But I suppose he would say, he did say yesterday, and you chose some clips, that you could broadcast because there were plenty.
I saw that in The Guardian because they never blanch at printing the F or other words, of course. Yes, go on, Christian. I saw what he said.
That's right. So you printed the child friendly version where he said, these are our rules and this is the state of it. So, you know, he said it's not, nobody should be caught out by this. Nobody should be surprised by this.
Let's move to other stories. Front page news. Reeves eyes tax raid on landlords. Why? And what would that raid look like?
Well, the why is well understood these days, isn't it, Nick? Because they have to find tens of billions of pounds of tax rises in the budget, which is hurtling towards us probably in very early November. We have been looking at all of the different kites that the Treasury has been flying over the summer holiday. And that includes new property taxes, new raids on pension allowances, tweaking the rules on inheritance tax. We now get from a great scoop from the Times that the Treasury is now very keen to apply national insurance tax to the income from rental properties, which is not currently paid. And they say that could raise several billion pounds a year. And I don't know where to start with this. I mean, first of all, I think you could take it as an isolated idea and say, well, that's interesting. Maybe you could equalise the tax that people pay on their forms of income. And then you go, hang on a minute. This actually just demonstrates the extent to which they are now ripping the sofa apart to try to find ways to raise money, not least because they've ruled out the big ones of income tax and VAT. So they're going to start looking at all the different ones they can possibly tweak and get away with. And the person at the heart of this now is Torsten Bell, who I know is often on your show, Labour Minister, Labour Treasury Minister. Prior to coming into government, he was running a think tank, which I have to say, I don't think this man has ever seen a tax that he didn't like the look of and didn't like the idea of raising. He is a tax enthusiast. There's no other way to put it. So Rachel Reeves has put him in charge of coming up with budget ideas. And I don't think you can find anybody better suited to the job from the Chancellor's perspective. I'm your man, I'm sure he could say. I got loads of ideas. So he's busy working on them, including possibly the extension of national insurance tax to the income from rental properties, which a lot of people have said will just lead to people selling up and getting out of the market, to which some people have said, fine, good, put those properties back on the market. But it just goes to show, I think, the extent to which this government is getting increasingly desperate in its search for money.
Christian, thanks so much. Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. We will leave it there, 7:39. A lot of you getting involved, and by the way, on the subject of Ryanair. Let's just quickly read some of these out. Wayne in Bridlington. My son and his girlfriend went to Spain last week. His bag and his girlfriend's bag were 2 centimetres over their marker. They were fined £60 each. They're aged 17 and 18 and had saved months for the holiday. The fine took a large chunk away from their spending money. Same subject. This comes in from David. The Ryanair baskets they use to measure the size have to fit on the seat are much smaller than the size of the space under the seat. It is a scam, as usual. I have no problem with you ringing in and wanting to give their views on Ryanair, because, as I told you before, excuse me, I have some limited experience with the airline, and it is anything but pleasant. Maybe we'll talk more about that. But let's go to other matters, and it's a day when the stories on the back page, the sports section, actually find their way onto the front page, because it went from Cleethorpes to Gleethorpes for Grimsby Town. Here's the moment they won on an extraordinary elongated penalty shootout. I think it was 12-11 or something, I can't remember. Up at Blundell Park, this is Manchester United's, I think, new signing, but don't quote me, Brian Umbuewo.
Manchester United might be a big fish, but they are used to dealing with those around here. Grimsby Town have reeled them in.
Courtesy Sky Sports, that commentary. Afterwards, Manchester United manager, troubled, I would suggest, Ruben Amorim.
I know that the best team won, the only team that was on the pitch. I just want to say I'm really sorry for the fans. The support that they gave me and the support that always, with all the defeats that they helped the team, today have nothing to say. I'm really sorry.
Pleasure to bring in Henry Winter, award-winning football writer and broadcaster, currently working with Sports Illustrated, joining me now. As I said earlier, Henry, it used to be glory, glory, Man United. Now it has to be, what's the story, Man United? Where have the wheels come off and why? Morning, Henry.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, I mean, as you say, the back pages are having an absolute field day on the front day because of all the inflatable haddocks that the Grimsby fans had. Everyone's getting battered. It's about Manchester United are in a bad place. It's an act of COD. As you heard in the commentary there, people were being reeled in. The minnows were having a field day. I mean, it was fantastic. First, it's a great day of sport, yep. And it was totally deserved. And we talk about the money at the top and less money at the bottom. And it's quite nice to see sort of downstairs invade upstairs. So there's all that element. But for Manchester United, there's a serious debrief going on today with the owners and the manager and with the manager and the players when they finally report in for a sort of a warm down to follow the meltdown. So, so many issues at Manchester United. Ownership, cultural, structural on the pitch, the manager, motivation, who I'm sure you saw the pictures last night, was basically hiding in the dugout when, as you say, that 12-11 shootout was going on. That wasn't the leadership that we expect from Manchester United, the club of Ferguson, the club of Busby.
What happens to Mr. Amorim, do you think, Henry?
I think they back him for now because they've given him, what, £300 million, £200 million to sort of strengthen his strike force. As you say, Brian Umbuemo, who missed that penalty, he was a good player and has actually done pretty well for them. But they haven't addressed issues in central midfield. They've got a goalkeeper who's just flapping at everything and he's just getting mocked every time he gets the ball by the opposition fans. And so they haven't sort of addressed certain things. They've got a system there, without getting over tactical, which doesn't suit a Manchester United traditionally. We've always played with flying wingers. Nick, you and I grew up with them playing with just great expanse down the wing, going back to best gigs and players like that. And they're now playing with clipped wings, and it just doesn't work. They feel stifled, and it's not actually producing results either.
Lastly, Henry, you've seen more football than most. Have you ever seen the wheels come off a team in this style before?
Oh, that is a good question. This is a
chronicle. I mean, Leeds United were a powerhouse, and they've had them. You know, they've had their struggles, but this is extraordinary by any measure, isn't it?
Yeah, particularly for a financial powerhouse like Manchester United, commercial, you know, bandwagon, everything about them. But no, this is pretty spectacular. But this really goes back to when Sir Alex Ferguson left, they didn't get the right successor in and they didn't get the right people behind the scenes. David Gill, the chief executive, left at the same time and they've really struggled to replace him.
Always good speaking with you. Henry, have yourself a good day. Thank you. Henry Winter, award-winning football writer and broadcaster, currently working with Sports Illustrated, 7:43. Now, a lot of you phoning in with our landlord conversation. This, so I just raised it with Christian May from City AM. It's the front page of one of your papers, The Times. Reeves eyes tax raid on landlords to raise £2 billion. And as Christian explained, this is because, as I think he uses the expression, they're ripping the sofa to shreds to try and find cash. It could raise around £2 billion. But Well, how would landlords react? Martin's in Barnsley. What do you want to say to this, Martin? Good morning.
Well, morning, Nick. Well, I'm a landlord and I'm a working person as well, so I get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, so In building trade,
and what
run-down
would this,
properties, what nobody will not can't buy are generally bought by landlords.
Yes, yes.
So basically what you're going to do is you're going to choke off investment in the system.
Yeah.
Because all those properties are not going to sit there, so your VAT returns are going to go down.
Yep.
On top of that, in 2028, all new properties have got to be EPCC.
Just so remind me what that is. That's something, energy certificate, energy...
It's an energy certificate. So basically, that'll not get done. And then all rented properties have got to be a C, I think, memory serves me lightly, by 2030, which isn't that far away.
No, it's not.
So that'll not get done. So basically, you'll have people running to council for houses because it'll be cheaper for you to have the house stood empty than have somebody in it.
But now, there will be people listening, oh, how can this man say that? He's got a house, someone else is paying his mortgage, he will gain from the capital growth, in the value of his property. How would you respond to that?
Well, that money I put into the property, I paid tax and national insurance on.
Yes.
Nobody actually sat there and gave it to me.
Yep.
So basically, if he goes down that route, he'll kill what's left at building trade, and the building trade is starting to look on its knees. Everybody's quiet.
Right. And you are in the building trade as well, are you?
I am in building trade. So you go down that route, you're going to lose VAT plus all the materials, because nobody's going to pick a house up for £50,000 or £60,000, which is quite easily in South Yorkshire, and spend £20,000 in it, because you could end up with 28% tax on it. You're not going to do it.
Martin, thank you. This is a story to which we shall return. Good luck. I need to stress that this is only a possibility, but as most financial commentators are saying, she's trying to find every which way to grind out the cash. Martin, good luck with what you're doing. Coming up later in the show, Send gone round the bend. That's Send as in special educational needs and disabilities. A report endorsed by former Conservative Chancellor Sir Jeremy Hunt says that too many young people are being diagnosed, but author Kat Brown has ADHD, and she says...
There's certainly been a significant rise in the number of people seeking out diagnoses. A lot of that is simply due to the pandemic really having taken away a lot of coping mechanism.
Coming up after the headlines, we've been talking a lot about our children. The government's saying how they can save £7,500 a year with childcare. If that affects you, you need to stay tuned. 7:46 now though, LBC News headlines and Thomas Watts.
A shooting during mass at a school in Minneapolis is being investigated by the FBI as an anti-Catholic hate crime. A report has found more than 280,000 crimes went unrecorded by police forces in England and Wales last year. And landlords could face a tax hike in the budget this autumn. LBC weather, most places seeing sunshine and scattered showers, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webbs. Let me keep you up to date with what's happening on the Underground. There's been all sorts of problems this morning. There are still severe delays on the Hammersmith and City line, but it's minor delays now for the Circle and District, and also severe delays on the Mildmay line for London Overground. On the roads, long delays on the North Circular Road going eastbound to the Kenning Hall interchange. It's because a van has broken down. Westbound is all open but very busy because of onlookers. In Bermondsey, the Old Kent Road, the A2, is closed in both directions, and that's all down to an accident. The investigation works are still taking place. In Fulham, it's very busy on the Wandsworth Bridge Road, northbound heading towards the New King's Road junction.
This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
How will you react if you win big with Win Plus?
I can't believe it!
Enter now at winplus.co.uk to get in the draw. 18 plus GB only. T's and C's apply.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Ever want a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Tough. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Train to Pevensey Bay. Beach, mates, cooler. Oh,
Danny, you got the hummus, yeah?
Of course.
Now this is what it's all about. Time to relax.
Huh? Frisbee? No, you two crack on.
Just made the train. Now home to over half the beach from my bag. 10 out of 10 day, though.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before 8 now. You have the possibility of getting up to 30 hours of free childcare a week, but my goodness me, you're going to have to move pretty quickly to avail yourself of the government offering. And here to explain more is Labour MP and Minister for Early Education, Stephen Morgan. Good to have you on, Minister. We'll talk about the deadline, which is just days away in a moment, but what is it exactly that's on offer? Morning to you.
Well, Nick, well, we know that the last few years have been really tough on family finances, and how often a child does can really be determined by their background, and we want to break that. And that's why we're investing in schemes like the Holiday Activity and Food Programme, £600 million announced today to support the Best Start Family Activity Scheme. But more broadly, we want to make sure that every child gets the best start in life. We published a strategy, as you know, because we spoke about it in July this year. And parents have now got just 3 days left to apply for 30 government-funded hours from September, which could save parents, on average, £7,500 a year.
So what is the current provision, Minister? What will it go from?
So it's stepping up, and it's been stepping up over the past few years. You'll know we inherited a pledge without a plan, and we've been working really closely with early years providers and local authorities to deliver our promise to parents. It's 15 hours currently. It will be stepping up to 30 hours from the 1st of September next week. So parents need to apply for a code via the Childcare Choices website and then access that childcare from next week onwards.
The cost is £600 million. Is this new money you're announcing today, or was this in the autumn, spring statement?
Well, the Prime Minister's made early education one of his key priorities. It's the top priority for the Education Secretary. We'll be spending £9 billion on early education next year. So significant investment in children's futures, because we know that if you invest in early education, it makes a huge difference to improving outcomes for children later in life.
OK, so just to spell out, because listeners obviously will be, which is the website that they can go to get more details, Minister?
Childcare Choices. It's a really clear website that gives parents lots of information. And if they get into any difficulty, then they can obviously contact their local authority as well to get more information.
OK. And what has the current uptake been like? Has it proved to be fairly fruitful?
I'm really confident we will deliver for parents across the country. The uptake's been really positive so far, with hundreds of thousands of parents benefiting. But I just want to make sure that every parent that is eligible knows that they're able to access this support from government and to check if they're eligible via the website.
As you are a minister in the Department of Education, I will get a word from you on a couple of other stories, if I may. The suggestion that the provision of SEN, Special Educational Need and Disability Education, is running, quotes, out of control, in a report that has that title, endorsed in part by former Conservative Chancellor Jeremy Hunt. They're saying that there is a concerning overdiagnosis. Would you concur?
Well, we've spoken before, Nick, about this. We think the SEND system is broken. It's failing parents. It's failing children. We want to make sure we're getting the right support in the right place for children. We've invested in this. We've put $1 billion in to support families. We've announced $740 million for more places for children with SEND in schools as well. And we're rolling out 1,000 Best Start family hubs with a dedicated SEND professional in those settings as well. And we're listening really carefully to what parents and professionals tell us to make sure we've got that system right for the future.
But is there an over-diagnosis, as Sir Jeremy suggests?
I mean, not terms that I would use, but I think it's absolutely vital that we listen to what parents tell us. The previous government described the system as lose, lose, lose. We're working really hard to understand what needs to change to make sure that parents get the support that their children need at the start of their life.
All right. Staying with children, almost 250,000 children are about to start school, and of course you are the early education minister, to start school suffering with allergies. Experts say British youngsters are among the worst hit in the world. 40% of UK children have a diagnosed allergy, such as to a certain food product or hay fever, says Asthma UK. Why are our children supposedly so allergic?
Well, I'm asthmatic myself and suffer from hay fever, but I'm working really closely with some of the charities that are campaigning for change to make sure we've got the right support available in schools to give teachers good quality advice. I hear directly from parents across the country about these issues, and it's really important that we make sure that the information we give to parents is, and to schools is accurate and updated to reflect changing needs.
All right. A couple of other things. You've been talking about the provision of cash to help people with providing care for young people. But if we're talking money, the promise made by one of your senior colleagues, Ed Miliband, that the people's energy bills will come down by £300 in the lifetime of this parliament, well, it's not looking very good, is it? They went up by £187 now. Your reaction to that?
Well, obviously what we've inherited, Nick, is energy bills soaring.
No. Gas bills are down by 25% since January, Minister.
Well, we're investing in clean energy solutions, which I think is absolutely the right...
Which have cost £815 million this year, by the way, to switch off.
Well, our plan for change is protecting consumers. We're investing in three million more people getting access to the £150 off through the Warm Home Discount Scheme. That's yes. 6 million in total. And we're going to continue to invest in clean, homegrown power.
Why? It's cost, I say again, £815 million so far this year to switch off wind farms.
Well, why are we
pouring more money into this? It doesn't seem to make sense.
Because it's the long-term solution to invest in clean energy. It's part of our mission that we want to deliver for our country to grow the economy and invest in renewable energy for the long term. The other choice is to kind of keep on the roller coaster of fossil fuels.
Yes, with gas prices down 25%, Minister.
Well, we're investing in renewable energy. We think that's absolutely the right thing to do to help bring down bills longer term.
All right. And finally, the suggestion that the Chancellor might be looking to raid landlords, putting national insurance on rental income. It would raise some £2 billion. Can you confirm that?
Obviously, matters around fiscal policy and taxation are matters for the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and details will be set out in budget. What we've been focused on doing, Nick, is growing the economy, fixing those foundations of the economy, and investing in public services, like I'm announcing today, this investment that we're putting into the Holiday Activity and Food Programme and our childcare entitlement that I encourage parents to access from September.
Yep, that website one last time, if you would, Minister.
Childcare choices.
Grateful for your time. Minister for Early Education, Stephen Morgan, taking us to 7:57, or 3 minutes before eight. Let's come back to this idea, as again, I've just challenged him, and I have to tell you that if you're in France, the United States, actually most of Europe, most of Western Europe, they are paying considerably less for their power. Gavin's in Selby. Gavin, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Good to speak to you eventually.
Good to have you on, sir. What are you going to tell me?
All right. Okay. Just a few misconceptions with regard to solar and things like that with China. We're all saying we're only a little place. We started the Industrial Revolution. We can also help with the Green Revolution. Unfortunately, we're way behind China. And I've just got a few facts, if I may, just to give you their solar power is 1,080 gigawatts already. The wind power is 640 gigawatts. gigawatts by the end of this year. The offshore wind is 42.7 gigawatts.
Yes, which you're starting to lose the audience a little bit. What is the point behind that? What do those figures mean in terms that listeners can understand?
Okay, so what I'm trying to say is we shouldn't be sitting waiting for other countries to do things. We should be on ahead of this stuff ourselves.
Why? It's costing us more.
Everything has a cost, but as you've said earlier as well, that those costs will come down once we've got the correct infrastructure.
Well, there's no indication that they will, though. That they're going in the other direction, Gavin.
Over the short period, yes. It's an investment. That's the term, investment. You've got to...
But as our economics commentator John said at the top of the show, I've heard this before about North Sea oil. I've heard this about nuclear power. This is just another ruse. This is another white elephant, isn't it?
No, I wouldn't say so, because once it is there, I think the actual problem is the fossil fuel people are scared that they're going to be losing out, and that's why we're paying more, because we've got to pay for the subsidies of the fossil fuel.
Okay. Gavin, I would say again, I don't know how else to say this, gas prices are down 25% since the start of January, so the government cannot keep saying that, it's Ukraine and the war. Gavin, have a safe day. The music means we must move on. Coming up after the news, this idea that SEND in schools has gone round the bend. Is that the reality? Plus...
The Home Office and the owners of the Bell Hotel are appealing the High Court's decision to impose an interim injunction on the housing of asylum seekers. I'm LBC's Shivani Sharma with the details.
Plus, staying with our children, as I mentioned to the minister there, 240,000 children will start school next month with allergies, the highest figure anywhere in Western Europe. Why are our children so allergic? News is next on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, authorities in the US say the suspect in a school shooting in Minnesota had planned to release a disturbed manifesto. The FBI is treating yesterday's attack at a Catholic school in Minneapolis as an act of domestic terrorism and a hate crime. Two young children were killed and 17 other people were injured. Javen Willis, a 13-year-old student, has been speaking to NBC about the attack.
I told them to keep their head down, and I look up, and unfortunately, I see a body on the floor not moving. And when we get outside the building, my friend, he tells me that he has been hit and that he had to be rushed to the hospital.
The 23-year-old attacker, named as Robin Westman, died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. A watchdog has warned police forces logging of antisocial behaviour is unacceptably low. An HMIC report says more than 280,000 offences went unrecorded in England and Wales last year, but it's welcomed an overall improvement with nearly 95% of crimes logged. Landlords could have to pay national insurance on rental income as part of efforts to raise more revenue. Officials are reportedly looking at making the tax change in the budget this autumn. The Education Minister, Stephen Morgan, who's just been speaking to Nick, wouldn't be drawn on the report.
Obviously, matters around fiscal policy and taxation are matters for the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and details will be set out in budget. What we've been focused on doing, Nick, is growing the economy, fixing those foundations of the economy, and investing in public services, like I'm announcing today, this investment that we're putting into the Holiday Activity and Food Programme and our childcare entitlement that I encourage parents to access from September.
The former Health Secretary, Sir Jeremy Hunt, says young people are being overdiagnosed with mental health conditions. He's used the foreword of a policy exchange report to warn of excessive impulses to medicalise and diagnose the routine. The report says a fifth of children now have special educational needs and disabilities. Ruben Amorim has apologised after Manchester United were dumped out of the EFL Cup by Grimsby.
I just want to say I'm really sorry for the fans. The support that they gave me and the support that always, with all the defeats that they helped the team, today I have nothing to say. I'm really sorry.
They lost 12-11 on penalties in the second round of the League Cup last night. Rangers manager Russell Martin has also apologised to fans after a 9-1 aggregate loss to Club Bruges in the Champions League. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 92.55. It closed down 10 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 16. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many. The rain heavy and thundery at times with the possibility of some hail. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Summer's best bits. Relaxing on beaches. Catching up with friends and family. And here's another summer highlight. Right now with SEAT Summer Savings, you get £500 off the SEAT range on top of existing offers. Just order and take delivery by the 30th of September. SEAT Summer Savings. Now on.
T's and C's and exclusions apply. UK retail customers 18 plus. Excludes SEAT Ibiza. New stock vehicles only, subject to availability. Saving including VAT applied to on the road price.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 4 minutes after eight on Thursday, August the 28th. Coming up in this hour, a report we were just discussing, the overdiagnosing of mental health in young people will stretch the state to the brink. In the policy report endorsed in some part by the former Conservative Chancellor, Sir Jeremy Hunt, we'll give you more details on that and, of course, get your reactions. That's what we're about. In other news, more on this LBC exclusive.
After an investigation by LBC, the Health Secretary says he will meet with the families of stillborn babies found buried in mass graves. I'm Chris Chambers with the details.
Ever heard of a solar postbox? No, me neither. Here's a little of a social media post put up by Royal Mail.
We're rolling out 3,500 postboxes of the future.
These new postboxes feature a solar-powered scanner and have a slot that's twice the size of a regular postbox.
Why? Who asked for it? We'll look at that in more detail. We'll get back to the conversation about the tax raid on landlords. And remember this call from Stuart in Rochester in Kent back in May.
Wife and daughter are live-in patients until hopefully September when we get to ring the bell. And I commute daily from Rochester to Sutton.
Every day?
Every day. I want to be there. I need to be there.
Now, Stuart was telling us that after a phone call about the King's message for cancer sufferers, he was speaking of his four-year-old daughter, Eleanor, receiving treatment for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And I said, do let us know when the good news comes in.
Treatment is done, this course is run, and you are on your way.
Oh, this has been an easy morning, hasn't it? With John and Eleanor. Fantastic news for young Eleanor. A full report later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's an emotional roller coaster, this one, isn't it? Going to have to reach for a glass of red at this level. It's not even 8:30. It's a world record. Right, on to other matters. Have you got a child with SEND needs, special educational needs or disabilities? And how good is the provision of care? And what do you make of a report that overdiagnosis of mental health conditions in young people will stretch the state to breaking point? Support services for children and young people are costing £16 billion a year and, according to the Policy Exchange, are financially unsustainable. They say a new normal has been created, with misbehaving or feeling sad resulting in actual medical diagnoses. Thus, those with acute needs miss out. This is backed by Conservative former Chancellor and indeed Health Secretary, so he has considerable skin in the game, Sir Jeremy Hunt. He says almost one in five children in English schools now require SEND, I remind you, Special Educational Needs and Disabilities, SEND support. Well, early in the programme, I spoke with the relevant minister, Early Education Minister Stephen Morgan, and I put these suggestions or ideas or cost to him. His response?
We think the SEND system is broken, it's failing parents, it's failing children. We want to make sure we're getting the right support in the right place for children. We've invested in this, we've put £1 billion in to support families, we've announced £740 million for more places for children with SEND in schools as well, and we're rolling out 1,000 Best Start family hubs with a dedicated SEND professional in those settings as well. And we're listening really carefully to what parents and professionals tell us to make sure we've got that system right for the future.
But is there an over-diagnosis, as Sir Jeremy suggests?
I mean, not terms that I would use, but I think it's absolutely vital that we listen to what parents tell us. The previous government described the system as lose, lose, lose. We're working really hard to understand what needs to change to make sure that parents get the support that their children need at the start of their life.
So that's the Early Education Minister, Stephen Morgan. Let's speak with a senior fellow at the Policy Exchange, co-author of the report, Jean-André Praeger, who joins me now. Is it your suggestion then, Mr. Praeger, that there is overdiagnosis going on, as I raised with the Minister? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think what the suggestion is that there's been concept creep in some of how we think about mental health conditions and what we think is that given that the societal norms, I think, have shifted, our provision needs to also shift.
In what fashion?
Well, we have a lot more people, disability living allowance, child disability living allowance, obviously claiming SEND support, and in need of mental health provision in the NHS, we have systems that were created for very small groups of people and that now are unable to meet the demand or indeed support these individuals in the proper manner.
From whom did you get the evidence?
Well, we've looked at a number. Well, we spoke to a number of people with interviews.
What sort of people, Mr. Praeger?
People in the educational sector, physiotherapists, language therapists, a number of people across the piece, and also obviously looked at data from the IFS, a number of different think tanks, and that's how we've done this report.
Is it the contention of the report that in some instances misbehaviour is being diagnosed when it's merely children being naughty, as I was at school?
I think what we're trying to say is that sometimes parents, behaviour of children, they want to seek a reason for that behaviour, and that sometimes leads to diagnosis when there might not need to be a diagnosis. And so what we are trying to say is that sometimes everyday behaviour has become diagnosed when actually it's not necessary.
And what does that everyday behaviour look like to you?
Well, I think.
I mean, is that being noisy at the back of the class? Is it being a bit rambunctious? What is it, Mr. Praeger?
I think it can be on occasion. I think everyone's different. But my macro point I'm trying to make is that I think on occasion we everyday difficulties become medicalised in ways that are unhelpful, one, to provision for children, but also for the state and how we actually support people in the ways they might need to be supported. Therefore, the most acute needs sometimes don't get supported properly.
Were you and your fellow author able to look at how we stack up compared to other European countries?
We didn't do a lot of international comparisons, but as you know, for young people in particular, and the number of people who are claiming disability benefit, for instance, and who are on incapacity. And we've got a major issue with the number of young people who are not in education, training or work. One in eight, for example, are not in that now. And we are an outlier in many ways compared to our European counterparts. And actually, since COVID, we've struggled to rebuild the same level of some of our European counterparts.
Grateful for your time, Jean-André Praeger. Thank you. You're senior fellow at Policy Exchange. You're the co-author of this report we're discussing, which is titled Out of Control, because that is their contention. Well, let's put that to Jane Harris, who's vice chair of the Disabled Children's Partnership and CEO of Speech and Language UK. What you've heard, possibly what you've read, how would you choose to react? Good morning to you.
I mean, I think there are lots of interesting ideas in this report. They would be interesting if they were true, but they're not. There is no evidence that we are overdiagnosing these conditions. When proper researchers, academic researchers, look at the evidence on this, what they find is that the studies that claim that are actually really poor studies and they cannot be trusted. In fact, the reality is parents and children are struggling, waiting months and years to get help. And actually lots of conditions are underdiagnosed. So one good example of that is something called developmental language disorder, which affects 700,000 children in the UK. That's not even mentioned in this report. So how can we take seriously a report that doesn't even mention, such a huge group of children?
Well, let's look at some figures that the Policy Exchange would back up their work. If we look at, and you'll be aware of these EHCPs, for my listener, that's an educational health and care plan. The provision of those has risen by virtually 11% year on year. Well, surely that speaks, well, obviously it speaks to increased need. Does it not speak to a possible increased diagnosis?
No, EHCPs are totally different from diagnosis. A diagnosis is something that a medical professional does, usually trained in the NHS, you know, who is using clinical guidelines to do that. That's a totally different thing. An EHCP
is about...
Do you
not need that diagnosis to get to an EHCP?
No, you don't. You don't. Sometimes people are told they do, but that's not actually true. An EHCP usually is requested by a school because they, or a nursery, because they know that a child is struggling and they know they don't have the expertise and resources to help that child.
But surely that child is struggling because he, she might have some kind of SEND, SEND, right?
Yes, but also...
Well, then they are linked, surely, Jane.
Well, they are, but the key point is that if schools were run in a different way, some of those children might not need an EHCP. Right. If we had schools that actually worked in a way that supported these children, one of the things that's happened in our schools over the last 10, 15 years is they've become more and more rigid. So there's kind of rules in schools now, like you can't, you know, use a ball in the playground. There's rules in schools like, you know, children all the time have to keep their eyes on the teachers. Well, an autistic child couldn't do that. 50 years ago, a child like that might have coped in school and might never, some of those children, not all of them, some of them would absolutely have always needed an EHCP, but some of them would have coped. But it's that we've changed the culture of schools to a point that more and more children need something different from what our schools are giving them.
Did I hear you say you can't use a ball in a playground?
Loads, yes, yes.
What? That's now a law, is it, in schools?
It's not a law.
Sorry,
but
law was the wrong word. I do apologise.
No,
that's
sure.
Now a rule in schools, is it?
In many schools, you are not allowed to use it.
Why?
Because I think schools are really, for understandable reasons, concerned about children's behaviour. But their response in too many instances is to put in these really rigid rules. We did a survey of teachers at Speech and Language UK, and 78% of teachers said that children are being punished for having speech and language challenges in schools. We've got to change the culture of our schools. We can get out of this broken system. Everyone agrees it's a broken system, but the way to do that is to equip schools to help these children through better teaching, through better training for teachers and for nursery workers. It's through things like Ofsted actually holding schools to account for SEND, and right. Ofsted making sure there are flexibilities rather than these rigid rules.
Lastly, do you agree sometimes a child needs to be sad?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sadness is part of everyday life. But that's one of the problems with this report, is it totally mixes up mental health and diagnosable long-term, lifelong conditions that are about a different type of brain, like autism, like ADHD, and like developmental language disorder. It is true that NHS mental health services deal with both of those things, but they're totally different.
All right. Grateful for your time, Jane Harris. Thank you. You're Vice Chair of the Disabled Children's Partnership and your CEO of Speech and Language UK. Your call's coming in already on this. And coming up later in this hour, ever heard of a solar panelled postbox? No, me neither. What exactly does it provide for? Well, I've had the benefit of reading the report and I still don't understand, but we will give you more on that. It's 8:16 LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
The FBI is investigating a shooting during mass at a school in Minneapolis as an act of domestic terrorism. Watchdogs found more than 280,000 crimes went unrecorded in England and Wales last year. The Treasury is said to be considering a tax hike on landlords in the budget this autumn. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M25 clockwise from Junction 5 at the M26 to 6 at Godstone. It was after a car broke down earlier. It's been recovered, but it's still very slow. One lane's just been closed on the M3 southbound just before Junction 3 at Lightwater because a car has broken down. Very busy on the A12 northbound up to Junction 13 at Ingatestone. That's because a car's broken down here as well. And in Bermondsey, the A2 Old Kent Road remains closed both ways up to Peckham because the investigation works are still taking place after the accident last night. On the North Circular Road, eastbound queues to the Kenning Hall interchange, and that's where a van has broken down. On the trains, things are definitely starting to improve now. Minor delays for the Circle, Hammersmith and City and District lines.
This is LBC.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNC's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Julie could part exchange her car.
or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Or total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
You sound happy.
I've just spotted tuna in the fridge, and it's got my name all over it.
Well, be careful. It's a long way up.
Relax. We're insured, aren't we?
Nope. That's not what I've heard.
Because you never know what little pickles they'll get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Seriously, we're not insured.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Ascend, gone round the bend. Justin says, my wife is a primary education teacher. Many children she teaches are parents who ask for SEND diagnosis when clearly they have no issues. The parents seem to go on and on and on, and then even pay for a private diagnosis and bring it to school. Our local council does not accept private diagnoses, but have recently started to. Same subject. SEND is a gateway benefit allowing parents to claim PIP, etc., so that genuine claimants are being crowded out by people gaming the system. One last one. This comes in. I just want to check that I can read this. Yes, Adam. I'm a proud father of twins, a boy and a girl. My son is non-verbal autistic. Both our children attend mainstream schooling. And my son has an EHCP. This is an educational health care plan. It means he has a clear identity screenshot that anyone who's responsible for his care could understand his needs. This means he can have an integrated experience at school. This is a very perplexing area. Anne's in Haywards Heath. Anne, what do you want to say to this? Good morning.
Well, good morning to you, Nick. Thank you for letting me say anything. I'm really concerned about labelling children. We're even labelling adults now, but labelling children so young. We've got it wrong in this country. We've taken away the health visitors, the support systems for new mothers, young children. That doesn't happen anymore. Parents hardly see anyone.
Hold on. If a child does have...
Children into school, into nursery...
Anne, you must let me get a word in. No, that's right. If a child does have autism or ADHD, they surely have to have that label, no?
Oh, proper diagnosis. I do have grandchildren with severe autism on those spectrums. There is an increase, a huge increase, in Nick. I taught under fives for some years. I had them from birth almost to five, not four, five. They went to school ready. And so we do need that early diagnosis. But I can honestly say to everybody, I didn't see children on the scale that we have with autism and these disabilities back then in the 70s and 80s.
Why do you suppose it is? Or are we just getting better at diagnosing it?
You can usually tell if a child, you know, with young children, if they came in punching, biting, kicking, I wanted them. They didn't do that for very long as we worked with the children and the parents. But now, there's a big gap between parents and children. And if you think that in Finland, other countries, children really start learning about six or seven. But we're forcing children. You know, little boys, you were one, you had sons.
Mm-hmm.
Them behave and sit down for long periods. It isn't in their nature. They need to be active.
And lastly, obviously I don't expect names, but did you say one of your grandchildren has some form of autism?
I have two. I am amazed at the numbers of families that really do have one or two children.
And how does that autism display itself?
How
does that autism display itself? What do your grandchildren do?
Well, often you will see they spin. They would do spinning, always tapping their face. There's a lot of acute anxiety that is displayed. And because I did this for a long time, I would have seen. And when I did see a child with those symptoms that hadn't been diagnosed, you can talk to the parents and say, look, I think we need help here.
Right.
But children need special care when they're very young.
Okay. I'm grateful for your input and for sharing regarding your own grandchildren. Anne's concern is that there is too much labelling. We'll pick up on more of your calls about that. But let's go to other matters. And the Home Office's bid to challenge the decision to temporarily block the owner of the Bell Hotel in Epping from housing asylum seekers will be heard at the Court of Appeal later today. LBC's reporter, Shivani Sharma, joins us from the Court of Appeal. Just remind the listeners, if you would, the background to this, Shivani. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, the Bell Hotel in Epping has been housing 140 or so asylum seekers for the last 5 years, on and off. And the council, the local council, has been calling for this hotel to be closed, particularly after an individual at that hotel was accused and charged with sexual assault. Now, the council took that case to the High Court last week, Nick, and it successfully managed to argue that the hotel should be granted, that there should be a temporary injunction or a temporary ban on that hotel being housing asylum seekers, which in essence means that by the 12th of September, so in just over 2 weeks' time, the Home Office will have to find alternative accommodation for the 140 or so men currently living there. Now, last week, the lawyers representing Epping Forest District Council, which fought to close that hotel, successfully managed to argue that the hotel owners didn't have the right planning permission for the building to be used as a hotel, but that it's since materially changed, the new permission would be needed. Now, the council's lawyer also stressed that the hotel isn't a suitable location to house asylum seekers, with it being next to multiple schools and a care home. It also raised concerns about the protests we've seen in recent weeks, which stemmed from an asylum seeker at the hotel being accused, as I say, of sexually assaulting a teenage girl. Now, Chris Whitbread is the leader of Epping Council, and he explained to LBC why they took this decision to the court.
I took into account the strength of feeling of residents in Epping Forest. My local people have been contacting me directly and discussing this issue over the recent weeks, and I've been on the side of local people from day one. That's the most important thing.
Now, the Security Minister, Dan Jarvis, explained why the government is now fighting that High Court decision.
We've made a very clear commitment that we're going to close all of the asylum hotels. That was a manifesto commitment that we stood on and we will honour. We're clearing up the legacy that we inherited from the previous government, but the closures of these hotels need to be done in an ordered and managed way.
Now, if the government isn't successful at today's hearing, it will be under immense pressure, with an imminent deadline for removing asylum seekers from that Bell Hotel, for finding new accommodation and hoping that protests won't follow them there. But of course, there'll undoubtedly be concerns as well about what precedent that may set. We've already heard that since that High Court decision, other councils have been looking at making their own legal challenges. The Conservative leader, Kemi Badenoch, has told Tory councils to back this. Reform UK is doing the same, and even now some Labour-run councils are also looking into this too. So no doubt they'll be eagerly watching today's proceedings, and it will be a huge headache for the government if it does lose this appeal.
Shivani Sharma reporting from the Court of Appeal, 8:26. Let's just feature a couple of emails. Zach, you'll be the next caller on this idea of overdiagnosis of our young people. Roger in Brentwood, am I hearing this correctly? Jeremy Hunt is now claiming he knows better than doctors and mental health professionals. You couldn't make this nonsense up. Rebecca in Glasgow, similar theme. How dare Jeremy Hunt say children with close are being overdiagnosed? I forgot he was a doctor himself specialising in this area, tongue in cheek. Children have these needs and are being assessed by a medical professional within that field. These conditions don't go away just because you close your eyes and your ears. Zach in Portsmouth, what is it you want to say? Do you have a experience in this field? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Yes, I do, on sort of two fronts, really. So, firstly, my partner, she is a teaching assistant in a SEN school, and she sort of mentions quite regularly how sort of complex these sort of children are, to the point where they're non-verbal, they have...
How challenging is that for your partner?
Very. I mean, she comes home most days deflated and covered in bruises and bites and scratches, and says she's had her hair pulled. I mean, I've lost count the amount of times we've had to replace our glasses because they've been broken.
Really?
So, yeah, it's very sort of draining and daunting to a degree. Especially
Why does she
from an
still
outsider.
Do it, Zach?
Because she loves the job and she loves the kids that she works with.
But she gets hurt and she gets her glasses smashed and she gets exhausted.
Oh, I know, and she's paid absolutely dreadful for it as well.
Seriously?
Which is another thing. So, yeah, I think so. She works part time. She just had a child of our own. Well, it's almost two now. Thank you. But yeah, so she's gone back part time, and obviously, I suppose I could say it to a degree. But so she works 4 days a week, and she takes home just under £1,000 a month. That's how badly paid it. So yeah, so it's not the not the best job in the world in my side of things. But obviously, she absolutely loves it. So
if she'd been consulted by the authors of this report, and they'd said, "Do you think there's too much overdiagnosis? Are too many children being given told that they have SEND?" How do you imagine your partner would have responded?
I think she probably would have disagreed, partly because of sort of myself and my daughter. So I was diagnosed with ADHD in December of last year.
Right.
And obviously throughout my childhood, obviously I had ADHD, but always sort of put it off. And I was always sort of labelled as that, kind of like that word label, as that sort of naughty kid or that bad boy because I was playing up at school. Mm-hmm. And my daughter is currently going through the diagnosis process, which for a child, and she's eight, is about sort of 2.5 years long. For an adult, it's
sorry, your daughter. I thought you just had your child 2 years. Oh, you have a child by someone else.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh,
yeah, sorry,
gotcha.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So this little one's eight, is she?
She is, yeah. And right. So she's going through the diagnosis process at the moment, which for a child in our area is about 2.5 years. For an adult, it's about 10, right. Which is absolutely crazy. Yeah. But my daughter was sort of struggling with sort of her neurodiversity.
And lastly, how does that represent itself? What is it with your eight-year-old, and what do you see?
It's sort of inattentiveness. It's not being able to sort of focus on things or doing many things at once. And
you don't think that's a normal eight-year-old, though, Zach?
Not when they're being put on reduced timetables at schools because the school don't know how to deal with her behaviour. So her diagnosis and her EHCP actually unlocks that ability for the school to then have an extra member of staff there to support her so she can actually get a decent education.
Zach, look after both of them. Best wishes to your partner. What a smashing young woman she is to go through all of that and look after it. Have a good day. First class call. Thank you for that. Talking about first class matters, there's a change coming in the post.
Oh, yeah.
Ever heard of a solar-powered postbox? No, me neither. And why bother? But we'll have a report. They're about to be rolled out, thousands of them, apparently, across the country. A report after this. It's 8:30. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news, Thomas Watts.
At least 10 people, including a child, have been killed in Russian strikes on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv. President Zelensky says Moscow is choosing ballistics instead of the negotiating table after the major overnight assault. An education minister has told Nick he wouldn't say there is an overdiagnosis of mental health conditions. It follows a warning from Sir Jeremy Hunt of excessive impulses to medicalise and diagnose the routine in young people. A shooting at a school in Minneapolis is being investigated by the FBI as an anti-Catholic hate crime. Two children aged 8 and 10 were killed and 17 other people were injured in yesterday morning's attack. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many, the rain heavy and thundery at times with some hail, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC.
The seagull says, your IKEA food favourites are now available in Brighton. Meatballs, plant balls, fish and chips. All delicious. Especially the chips. Yum. IKEA Brighton, open 14th of August. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900. That's ADVICE to 78900.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
8:33, over provision of SEN, special educational needs and disabilities, at a price we can't afford. Well, that's what the report is saying. Bear in mind the bill's running now at getting towards £17 billion a year, and in one associated field, the number of diagnoses, this is EHCPs, by the way, has risen by all but 11% year on year. These are interesting figures, at least. Nick's in Hurst Pierpoint, which is in Sussex, and you're on the radio. Is there an overdiagnosis in your view? Good morning.
No, I don't think there's an overdiagnosis. I think there's a mishandling or that gets to the point of diagnosis.
Tell me what you mean by that.
So basically, I think if the state schools had a better understanding and a following to support the kids with special educational needs, it would be handled very differently. So I've got experience of one child going to a state school, one child going to a private school, and the way it was handled was very, very differently.
Okay, talk me through it.
So basically, my son was diagnosed, hard to get him to school, etc., etc. We had several meetings with local authority, headmaster. Headmaster's opening lines were, "I have no experience in special educational needs."
Right.
He blocked every single method to get my son additional help.
Right.
So basically, in terms of my son's dyspraxic, so basically two left feet, and this head teacher insisted on him doing dancing lessons.
What was the thinking behind that?
The man's setting his ways. He insisted on my son doing practical science lessons where he burnt his hand with a Bunsen burner.
Good Lord.
And this was just a catalogue of, instances that happened. So the problem with it is my son's in a special school now, an autistic school.
And how's that working out for him?
Brilliant.
Ah.
He's just taken his maths GCSE a year early. And the when you look at the adjustments that are made for some of these children, every case is different, the adjustments are very, very mild and they could be implemented in a state school.
So how does it differ then, private through state, as in your experience?
So basically there's an anxiety of having to deal with homework, an anxiety of having to basically face school every day. So the way that it's changed in the specialist school is they go to school slightly later, say 9:30. So the hustle and bustle of the home or the rush has gone, and the child becomes more relaxed when they're walking into school. And what they do is they take away the lessons that you or I, or some people would see as not being, too much use, i.e. dancing. And then what they do is they give them a 15-minute break between every lesson. So basically, if it's been a stressful time through that lesson, they decompress. They've rested and not going back to back. With my son's previous school, this headmaster would basically give detentions out if people were wearing the wrong colour.
That sounds like my days at school in the 70s. That sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, he would give detentions for if a child was wearing their outside coat because they're carrying two or three bags and they're worried about losing the coat and crazy. Whereas my daughter, privately educated, she's overachieving, so she's basically straight A student, got 9 GCSEs, A star, and her school dealt with her autism basically in 1 month.
What a difference. Nick, I have to move on. I know there's so much. Give my best wishes to your children. Good luck with their respective educational careers. But I must move on to take more calls. Nick, thank you again. Best to the family. And to look at other matters. And welcome some 3,500 solar-powered postboxes to be rolled out across the country, supported by a promotional video from the Royal Mail.
We're giving our iconic postboxes a real glow-up.
And we're rolling out 3,500 postboxes of the future.
These new postboxes feature a solar-powered scanner and have a slot that's twice the size of a regular postbox. We're doing this to make it even easier for customers to use postboxes to send parcels. So keep your eyes peeled, because you might be getting one of these postboxes near you soon.
Well, that video has pretty much explained it, hasn't it? You scan a barcode on the Royal Mail app to activate the opening for that drop down drawer for your parcel. There's a separate slot for letters, and solar power, I'm so sorry, a solar panel will power the scanner and the drawer mechanisms. This has been trialled this year if you live in the Hertfordshire or Cambridgeshire area, and the Royal Mail is saying it's the biggest change to postboxes in 175 years. This is because of a boom in deliveries and returns. So this is all you folk who get your clothes and everything sent. There's like a sea of cardboard seems to go to the door of my wife's. I just feel so strange to say that. It seems so strange. My wife's house. Yeah, a veritable sea of brown cardboard flows both ways. Kate Hardcastle, consumer expert, broadcaster, commentator with insight, with passion. So we do like our mail in some ways, but we don't get our post on time. It's a strange dichotomy here, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick, and congratulations on the nuptials. You look brilliant. Absolutely.
She's a lucky girl, Kate.
She is. We have got a lot of parcels in the system. One thing I can say as part of the research I've done, I've actually worked as a courier in our system. It is millions and millions of parcels a day. And we've seen that huge growth, not just from international sources. Like we've seen these Chinese retail brands like Temu really step up in terms of their presence. But you will probably be aware, if they're both ways, it's things like Vinted, these resale commerce where we the sender and we are the receiver, and therefore this is what we're seeing. We're seeing Royal Mail basically adapting, who've been quite slow off the mark, to this very parcel first world we live in.
So when I sat down this morning at about 10 minutes before 7 and I said, what the hell are they doing this? Who wants a solar power? I was told by my producer, stop being so old. She actually said, it's because young people are selling clothes on Vinted. She said exactly what you've just said. So this Vinted market is huge then, is it?
Absolutely.
Well done, Lucy. You're right,
millions,
I'm wrong. Not for the first time. Sorry, go on, Kate.
Millions and millions a day. A lot of people turn into it to make a little bit of income. There is a sustainability element to it. Look, I'm not just
saying... Oh, come on, sustainability, Kate. Phooey. Everyone buys this stuff and it all has to come in brown cardboard boxes. Then it all goes back again. You should go to shops. What's the matter with you young people?
We're not going to get a perfect solution to the sustainability element. We have consumers who want to buy. And if they're buying and reselling, there's an element of it that is at least seeing those clothes have second, third life. It doesn't mean that it's completely free. You know that, Nick. We've had this conversation before. But I think it's about trying to find an infrastructure for a postage stamp of an island, if you like. We live on a very small island. There's a lot of us on there. And that delivery system is quite full. And it's been pushed to extremes.
Last question, Kate. Why has Vinted taken off in such a style? Why does it do so well?
I think what's really interesting is it was truly the cost of living push that saw its success. So although we have other operators like eBay, it's brought quite a lean system with low fees, if no fees at all, for some operators on there. That said, there's going to be some changes, I think, as of 8th of September this year. So we're going to start to see those models as well change as they deal with this huge success that there's been. You and I just trying to shift some of the stuff out of the house, get rid of the clutter. Maybe they'll bring more clutter in.
Kate, thanks. Always good to speak with Kate Hardcastle, consumer expert, broadcaster, commentator with insight, with passion. Kate, thanks. 8:41. Tanya in Enfield, thank you for hanging on the line. Tanya, you work in the field of education or educational support, is that right? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. So I'm an educational psychologist.
An ed psych, as you're called, yes.
Yeah, some people shorten us to that. Yeah, that's true. And I guess I wanted to make a clear distinction between kind of spend, EHCPs, and the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. They're obviously correlated, but they're not the same thing.
No, okay. So talk us through the process as someone who's a professional in the field.
I mean, which process do you want? There's loads.
How do you get to an EHCP?
So it's a 20-week process, and that's across the nation. It's not borough-specific. That's kind of what's written in the code of practice. And the first kind of step of the formal application process is that schools will submit an application to their local authority. The local authority have 6 weeks to respond to that and kind of say, yes, we'll assess because we think there's grounds there to make an assessment, or no, we don't think we'll assess. Let's just stay on the path of yes for now.
Okay.
They say yes, and then that child's kind of case is allocated to an educational psychologist.
Right.
And they have 6 weeks in which to carry out the assessment, and that can be arranged to take place in a myriad of ways. But it does involve getting information from school, the family, and some kind of direct work observation assessment of the young person or child. That then goes back to the local authority to a panel, and they say, based on the assessments in the data that we have, the information we have, do we think that the criteria is met here? There are specific educational needs, and these needs cannot be met within the typical school's resources. both of those questions, there has to be a yes to them for the EHD to then go into draft form and be issued. And then the kind of local authority has time then to pull that plan together and then issue it. So that's kind of what the process looks like.
Right.
So it's a really long and strenuous process.
Okay. Now, we're talking about this because of the suggestion there is overdiagnoses or overdiagnosing. How would you react to that suggestion?
I think, like your guest earlier, who was part of this, I can't remember the name of the group, but the speech and language therapist that came on.
Yes.
She made a really important distinction that a diagnosis doesn't equate to an EHC and you don't need a diagnosis for
an EHC. That was Jane Francis you're talking about, yes.
Yes. So I really valued her input. So yeah,
my apologies. Jane Harris, she was with Speech and Language UK. Jane Harris. Go ahead.
And so diagnoses have increased, but I think we have to hold in mind that it's always a multidisciplinary team that makes that decision. And people would not give these diagnoses if they didn't feel that children met the criteria in the ICD-10, which is the diagnostic manual that we use here, or the DSM-5. So it's not like we put our finger in the air and see what sticks. Mm. There are clear criteria that have to be met for this to be given. And if professionals are giving these diagnoses where they shouldn't be given, people put their livelihoods at risk. I could lose my license if I don't diagnose, by the way. But if I gave evidence that wasn't accurate or I believed to be accurate at the time. So I think there's probably maybe an oversimplification, thinking that these things can just happen. You walk into CAMHS and you get one.
It's not the
reality. There's really stringent criteria and frameworks that need to be met for these to be issued.
Must leave it there, Tanya, only to get to the news. Thank you for all your background as an ed psych and educational psychologist. We'll stay with us. Also, coming up after the news, a development on a grim LBC exclusive from earlier this year.
After an investigation by LBC, the health secretary says he will meet with the families of stillborn babies found buried in mass graves. I'm Chris Chambers with the details.
More from Chamber after this. 8:45 LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
A child is among 10 people killed in Russian strikes on Kyiv overnight. An education minister's told Nick he wouldn't say there is an overdiagnosis of mental health conditions in young people. And a school shooting in Minneapolis is being investigated as an anti-Catholic hate crime. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M25 clockwise from the Clackett Lane services to 6 at Godstone. It was after that car broke down earlier. It's been recovered for a while, but it's still very busy. In Bermondsey, there are delays. The A2 Old Kent Road remains closed both ways because of the ongoing investigation. Also closed is the Croydon Road in Keston, and that's all down to an accident. It's happened at West Common Road, so that's also causing queues. Very slow on the A12 northbound up to Ingatston. That's because a car's broken down and also a van's broken down on the North Circular Road eastbound at the Kenning Hall interchange, and that's causing lengthy delays on the approach. On the underground, there are minor delays on the Bakerloo, Central and District lines.
LBC.
Hey parents, are you ready for the new term? At 2, we've got you covered for the big school shop. Count on us for A-star quality uniforms at amazing prices. Don't miss out on a pack of 2 perfect white polos from £3 or a pack of 2 trousers with reinforced knees for £7. Discover the full range at Sainsbury's and 2.co.uk. 2 works every time. Uniform prices from ages 3 to 6, subject to availability, delivery charges may apply.
Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Just because you can't see something doesn't mean it isn't there. You can't hold this in your hand or pack it in your bags. You can't touch it. But our network is around you, like oxygen. Near or far, we're there. That's why we've been awarded Best Mobile Network Coverage by Uswitch. O2, essential for living.
Based on Open Signal Awards, UK Mobile Network Experience Report, September 2024, to verify see opensignal.com/UK Mobile Report.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org. assuming you want to get noticed.
Sharing intimate photos of her without her consent.
Unwanted touching. Unwanted comments. Unwanted nudes.
Controlling what she can and can't wear.
Controlling who she can and can't see.
Threatening her.
Enough. This is abuse.
If you think it's wrong, act on it.
Call it out, show support, report it.
There are many ways you can safely tackle violence against women and girls. Find out how at gov.uk/enough. If someone is in danger, call 999.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
11 minutes before nine. Now, as you heard just before the news headlines, the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has pledged he will meet with the families of stillborn babies who were buried in mass graves. This was, of course, the news broke following a shocking LBC investigation. In December, we revealed over 89,000 stillborn babies were routinely being buried in mass graves across the country. LBC's Northwest correspondent Chris Chambers had the exclusive and joins me now with the update. Chris, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Having gone through this unimaginable loss, the parents of these stillborn babies weren't allowed to see their baby. They were told they'd be buried with a nice person who died on the same day. They were then told to go away and have another baby. But as we've reported already, we know they were being stored overnight in sheds in some cases, layered up in mass graves with hundreds of other babies, and then these graves were left open for up to 60 years in some cases. This was standard practice right up until the late 1980s, and families of those babies have lots of questions, which is why the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has told LBC he would be happy to meet with some of them.
Well, firstly, massive thanks and credit to LBC, because you have raised such a... it's one of those things, unless you have been through it, you can't possibly imagine what these families have gone through. You feel a shiver down your spine, and, you know, especially the scale as well. I think the important thing is, and what I'm keen to do off the back of your journalism and also the calls from my predecessors, is just now listen to what the family groups are saying, make sure we get this right and do this with them. I think it's really important that we hear from them what they've been through and how we can help to heal as much as possible. I think unless you've been through it, you can't imagine what they're going through, and I cannot imagine what they're going through. Anything we can do to help provide some healing, you know, I think we owe it to those families.
And there are so many questions. Who decided the babies would be dealt with this way? Why were parents lied to? And most significantly, where are the babies who can't be found? Gina Jacobs found her son Robert in one of these graves 50 years after he was born asleep, and she has her own theories.
The babies who can't be found, where are they? And I have to be blunt here, they haven't been buried, and it's as simple as that. So where are these babies? Now, I firmly believe they have gone for medical research without the knowledge of parents or families. Maybe this is why we were told the lie, because they wouldn't tell us the truth. We need to know where those babies are. We have full-term babies who are missing. So where are they?
The Redfern report, published in 2010, suggests a culture where babies may have been involved in medical testing, but records for this kind of thing only go back 25 years, so it's hard to get any idea as to whether there is any basis for this. Gloria McQuaid used to be a maternity nurse and says they never questioned what would happen after the baby was taken away.
Until I found out this, it never entered my head that anything other than the baby was buried with somebody. You know, I never questioned it, and in a way, it was quite cold. It's happened, and it certainly wasn't dealt with properly, I would have said. You could go even further. I mean, this is horrible, but then what happens to all the late aborted babies as well? What happened to them? It just doesn't bear thinking about.
As a result of this investigation, lots of families have come forward saying they are now looking for the graves of their stillborn siblings or children, and has prompted the Chippenham MP Sarah Gibson to call for a debate in Parliament. And there is a growing number of MPs backing that call, Nick, including the former Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn.
Chris Chambers reporting. Congratulations on that scoop, as we say in journalistic terms, and I know, Chamber, you won't let it go. More on that story to come. 7 minutes before nine. Now to Sharon in Welwyn Garden City. We're talking about overdiagnoses, and this speaks personally to your son. Is that correct, Sharon? Thank you for holding. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, my son's 13 years old, and he was diagnosed as being autistic when he was actually 5 years old, very young. Mm-hmm. But we didn't get to get any HCP plan for him until the end of primary school. And, you
so
know,
that's
that
about
was refused.
5 years later then.
Yeah. Wow. So he was very good when he was playing and he managed. And there was a point when he went into, and he was seven when I asked them, and I was categorically told he would never get one. It wasn't worth applying.
Did they not feel that he met the criteria? Is that why they said that?
Personally, I think it's down to the school and the people and the workload they have. My son's class in primary school, there were 10 children out of 30. Who all had special needs. It got to a point that there were so many of them, we had so many issues through the years, that the governors eventually gave emergency funding to allow a third teacher to come in to make the classes smaller into 20, only in the mornings. But I got to the point where I had a new SEN teacher at the primary school who was much more helpful, much more willing to help me. And by the end of the primary school, they said, we don't think he'll cope in secondary school. I went through that process, had to go through to tribunal to win that. Even though my son has an autistic diagnosis, I still had to go to tribunal because the council's basically first response is no. And one of the reasons there are so many diagnoses, I believe, at this time, is because as a parent on our own fighting this system, and time is against me, my son's going into year nine now, you know, GCSEs in a year time, is that in order to get additional support for him, where I want him to go to a special school, I have to get as much evidence as possible. As an autistic child, there are many related conditions he can have, such as dyspraxia or ADHD, you know, ADHD, ADD. Mm-hmm. And I would normally, 10 years ago, that the pediatrician, well, that's all under the umbrella. It's all connected. So you accept that. Now fighting the council, every piece of evidence I have, every diagnosis I have, goes towards a case to get him extra help.
What is your ultimate goal? What is your ultimate goal, Sharon?
My ultimate goal for my son is to get him into a specialist school because he is declining in grades in his current school. He can't cope with the 30 children, the noises, the workload. He's gone from top set math to bottom set math because they can't provide a teaching assistant in middle or top set math. So they just automatically put him in bottom set. They have £5,000 a year for him to provide him with support. He can't cope in that environment. He's not stupid, but he can't cope. And, you know, the system is forcing me. I got legal advice. I went to the autism show and I thought, can I do this any faster? Can I afford to pay it myself? They quoted me up to £12,000 if I went to tribunal, if the panel refused him a specialist school. They said £7,000 of that would be on reports, medical reports, that I would need as evidence. And that's why people, why I'm chasing dyspraxia diagnosis.
Lastly, how close are you, do you think, to achieving what you want to do?
Not very close. At all, because the council keep on, you know, I chase them every week. They say they haven't heard from schools. When they have, when I speak to schools, there's only one specialist school in my area, which is a 2-year waiting list. My son will be out of his GCSEs by that 2-year waiting list has gone down.
Sharon, I can hear the determination in your voice. Let us know how you get on. Please understand I'm only finishing with you to get other people involved. 3 minutes before, 3 minutes before nine the time. Hannah in Yeovil. Your story, Hannah. Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Excuse me. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead. Thank you.
I think when we start talking about things like this in a way that is ideologically driven rather than evidence-based, you are going to come a cropper because, in fact, there is no, for example, medical support evidence in the policy exchange document. Mm-hmm. And I think that without evidence-based...
Well, they might support, point to that 11% increase year-on-year on EHCPs, of course, Hannah. They might point to that.
You could point to a 20 to 50% increase in dementia. You could point to a huge increase in cancer diagnosis. You could point to a huge increase in diabetes cases.
But are we just getting better? But are we just getting better at diagnosing? Is that
Are we getting better at diagnosing SEND and mental health?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, what I'm saying is there's this increase because we might be better at doing it, if you see what I'm saying.
I think it's two things, Nick. I think, A, you're probably right, because, in fact, you know, until you use a telescope, you don't see the stars there, do you?
Oh,
so,
I like that
one point. And second,
oh, I like
thank
that
you,
expression.
You can use it.
I
thank
might
you.
Put that in my newspaper column. I won't give you any credit, but I might put it in the column this weekend.
Of course you won't give me any credit,
no,
Magpie. so I think
well,
also...
Sorry,
the
fact... Go on.
Yes, yes, you got one there.
Owie laughed, didn't we?
So I think the other thing is, of course, that over the last... The 10 years of austerity plus COVID contributed hugely to a slashing of NHS and social care and support services in the community. If you don't catch all these things early, I don't just mean, you know, certain conditions and mental health conditions. If you don't catch them early, they obviously deteriorate significantly. And you've had 10 years of very little health support, very little social care support, and then you had COVID. And government ministers consistently say, since COVID, we have seen an increase in... isn't the clue in the sentence?
So wise, everything you say. Hannah, thank you. I do like those expressions, and you're right to point to the years of austerity. I mean, it was the perfect storm followed by COVID, wasn't it? Thank you, Hannah. I've got to move on. Coming up after the news, more on this tax raid and landlords. And remember this call from Stuart in Rochester back in May.
My wife and daughter are live-in patients until hopefully September, when we get to ring the bell. And I commute daily from Rochester to Sutton.
Every day.
Every day. I want to be there. I need to be there.
Calling in to tell us about his four-year-old daughter, Eleanor, receiving treatment for B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And then...
Treatment is done. His course is run. And you are on your way.
And you'd need a heart of stone not to be moved by that report. Plus, in other news, a baby crisis that sees the rate hit a record low amid fears for a sustainable population level. Those stories and more after the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, at least 12 people, including three children, have been killed in major Russian strikes on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv. President Zelensky says Moscow is choosing ballistics instead of the negotiating table after the overnight assault. It follows talks led by Donald Trump earlier this month. Former Ukrainian MP Hannah Hopko says she is not hopeful of a resolution.
I'm pessimistic because this is a trap that Putin is organizing against American leadership, and also because I've seen this before in 2014, 2016. Putin is not interested in ending the war. He wants to start a new aggression, new confrontation with the NATO members.
An education minister has pushed back against claims young people are being overdiagnosed with mental health conditions. The former health secretary, Sir Jeremy Hunt, has warned society has lost sight of the fundamental reality that child development is messy. It's part of a policy exchange report that says the support system is under huge pressure. Early years minister Stephen Morgan was asked by Nick if he agreed with Sir Jeremy.
Not terms that I would use, but I think it's absolutely vital that we listen to what parents tell us. The previous government described the system as lose, lose, lose. We're working really hard to understand what needs to change to make sure that parents get the support that their children need at the start of their life.
A block on the use of a hotel in Essex to house asylum seekers is to return to the Court of Appeal this morning. The Home Office and the owner of the site in Epping are trying to challenge a temporary injunction granted by the High Court. It became the focal point of several demonstrations and counter-protests. The FBI is investigating a shooting at a school in Minneapolis as an act of anti-Catholic domestic terrorism. Two children, aged 8 and 10, were killed, and 17 other people were injured while attending Mass yesterday. The 23-year-old attacker died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. A government minister's refused to be drawn on reports of a tax hike for landlords in the upcoming budget. National insurance contributions could have to be paid on rental income. The idea, which could raise about £2 billion, is reportedly being considered by Treasury officials. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago reopened at 92.55. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.16. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many today. The rain heavy and thundery at times with the possibility of some hail. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well,
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine on Thursday, August the 28th, coming up in this hour. Story we discussed in the first hour. Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor, eyeing a tax raid on landlords to raise £2 billion. It would not break the red lines. It would not tax the working man or woman, but what on earth do they think the landlords will do? They'll just pass on the increase. Why don't they get it? Plus, why are we no longer bringing up baby? The fertility time bomb. Baby crisis hits a record low. Basil Vatter is a professor of reproductive medicine at Anglia Ruskin University.
There is less flexibility for and support for working parents right now. It's very limited. Perhaps these financial elements are having their greatest role.
And the story that will melt the hardest of hearts. We're at a cancer hospital as a four-year-old girl, rings that bell. Ring the bell to recovery.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
This story was first featured in our review of the financial headlines in the first hour of the show. It's the front page of one paper. Reeves eyes tax raid on landlords to raise two billion pounds, reports the Times. Treasury considering this. Officials examining the applying NI, National Insurance, bringing in, as it says, about £2 million. Now, this would not supposedly break the red lines. Remember, not raising taxes. But what on earth do they think landlords would do? Well, in the first hour of the show, I spoke to a minister, Early Education Minister Stephen Morgan. He insisted the government's focus, though, is to grow the economy.
Obviously, matters around fiscal policy and taxation are matters for the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and details will be set out in budget. What we've been focused on doing, Nick, is growing the economy, fixing those foundations of the economy, and investing in public services, like I'm announcing today, this investment that we're putting into the Holiday Activity and Food Programme and our childcare entitlement that I encourage parents to access from September.
If you are a landlord, how might you react? If you're a tenant, how would you react? Couple of expert witnesses to provide the background to our conversation. First, John McTurnan, who's a political strategist for Burson and served as a political secretary to Tony. Now, Sir Tony Blair joins me now. You're in support of this, John. Why?
Because, by and large, rents are rising quickly, and that's not attached to a rise in the cost for landlords. So landlords are reaping a windfall profit because of the demand for rented property. And it's fair, in my view, to tax all income in broadly the same way. So I don't see why income from capital, whether it's shares or dividends or, you know, for rentals from property, should be taxed differently from the tax on the labour when we go to work.
But, John, I am not a landlord, but if I were, I will simply pass that on, whatever increase I pass on in rent to my tenant or tenants.
Yeah, well, I'm in favour of rent controls too. I'm broadly actually in favour of much more radical sorting out the tax system, but I'm just basically, I do think there should be a debate about windfall increase in income, and the, you know, there's been windfall increase in income to landlords who've seen rising prices with no underlying change, significant change in the structure of the costs for their for the provision of their services.
But there has been an increase, hasn't there? Because there are, and many would say quite rightly, there are many more provisions, I understand, and I say again, I'm not one, that landlords have to have, where they have to have certain certificates and environmental certificates and what, and gas boiler checks, and these are all increases in their costs, aren't they?
Well, a lot of those costs have existed for a very long time. It comes down to should income that you get from capital you deploy, whether in savings or in shares or in owning property and then renting it, should that be taxed differently from the income that you get from going to work? And I don't think it should be.
All right.
I think it'd be fair taxation, but it requires a much more radical reform.
Okay, then in a way, if you want to go as far as rent control, this actually is probably going to do more harm, unless you bring it in with some form of rent control, John McTurnan, this is going to do more harm than good.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, I'm not in favour of costs being directly passed on by landlords who.
But they will, unless, as you say, you do something more radical.
But I think this is the problem. I mean, I think the problem the government have got themselves into is they're tinkering around the edges of some promises that they made in the election campaign, and it's probably better to step back and go, what do voters want a Labour government to do? They don't vote Labour for tax cuts and they don't vote Labour for public service cuts. So why not reset and say, we do have to increase taxes so we can increase spending on public service, and we'll do it in a fair way across everybody. If you keep finding and squeezing these areas, then you're going to get anomalies, because I think that there's a very good thread by the tax expert Dan Needle on X this morning, which he sets out precisely why this is not the most efficient way of getting taxation, but the inefficiency when government policy has been set by the constraints at the very beginning.
Lastly, the law of unintended consequences. Won't a lot of landlords simply sell the properties?
Yes, they will, but that may well assist those who want to buy properties.
Those who can only afford to rent, the market will shrink even more, no?
Yeah, the shrinking of the rental market would be a reverse on a bipartisan policy success since the 80s of doubling the size of the rental sector. In the end, it all comes back to speeding up building of housing, and that comes back to, I think, more radical reforms of planning legislation than the government have considered so far. And if they did that, they wouldn't need to be looking for squeezing odd bits of tax. They'd actually get the construction industry going.
John McTurnan, thank you. Served as political secretary to Tony Blair, you are a political strategist for Burson. Listening to that, Ben Beadle, who is a landlord and CEO of the National Residential Landlords Association. I'll ask you to comment on my contributors' views in a moment, but just initially your reaction to the story as is currently being floated with what the Chancellor might do. Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. We know that government need to improve house building. We know that they need to improve the supply of rental properties. It seems slightly counterproductive that you would look to tax your way out of this problem. I would have thought that you need to incentivize your way out of this problem. And you're absolutely right. Okay, maybe some landlords will exit the market, but I suspect this is about increasing rents. I think landlords will look to their businesses at the end of the day. And, you know, if government continue to layer cost upon cost on landlords, it's going to be renters that feel the downside to this, as far as the market will allow landlords to increase the rent. So I don't think this is the right solution. And as far as your previous contributor is concerned, you know, therein lay part of the problem. You know, this doesn't go far enough for somebody like John. He wants rent control at all cost. And I'm afraid rent control is one of the most damaging policies that we've seen right the way across Europe. And it's completely counterproductive. Luckily, this administration have already ruled out rent control.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but why would you say rent control has been so damaging?
Well, it hasn't increased supply of properties. It hasn't increased churn of properties. It's meant that properties don't come to the market. It diminishes supply and it reduces investor appetite. But, you know, don't quote me on this. It's Savills that say we need 1 million additional homes by 2031 just to meet demand. And my argument here, Nick, is that if you continue to make it an unattractive place to invest, you're not going to meet that target. And we know, you know, we've spoken about this on many occasions on this programme about spiralling rents. And I take issue with what John said about the underlying cost.
Yes, we know that there's been no increase in cost. My understanding is you have to get certain certificates and check them. Yeah. And quite rightly, by the way, I'm not saying but the boilers are safe on an annual basis.
100%, and I don't take issue with that. If you're a landlord, you need to do things properly. You need to make sure your appliances are safe. Nobody wants to put tenants at risk.
No.
So, you know, absolutely no issue with that at all. But John is absolutely wrong to the point of delusional when he says that underlying costs have not increased. We've spoken about punitive tax changes, including stamp duty as recently as this year. We've spoken about the inability for individual landlords to fully offset their mortgage interest. interest. We've spoken about renters' rights. We've spoken about minimum energy efficiency standards, where government are proposing a £15,000 contribution per property for landlords to bring their properties up to EPCC. I'm not against one of these policies as a soul, but you've got to look at the sector as a whole. And if you take these things as a package, it's no wonder that renters are feeling the brunt of it. And it's all well and good for ministers to say they're building more social homes. Jam tomorrow policies won't wash. We need homes now, and it will be the private rented sector given the opportunity to deliver them. And the sooner the Chancellor realises that, the better.
Lastly, I have asked you this before, I think. A lot of people think landlords have portfolios of 20, 30, 40 houses. Isn't the vast majority owned by somebody, a couple, who maybe they keep his or her flat? It's like two properties or low, something or fewer, something like that, isn't it?
Well, let me reel off a few stats for you.
Well, I'm going to write them down, because I always ask you these, so let's try and make a note of them this time.
94% of properties in the UK are owned by individuals, typically. About half, around 45-50%, are owned by people that have one or two properties. So we need to remove ourselves from the idea that this is, you know, some sort of big incorporation, faceless, bureaucratic business. These are mum-and-pop landlords who are doing a great job, and I will talk them up every time that I come on your show.
Good to have you on, Ben. Look after yourself. Ben Beadle is a landlord and CEO of the National Residential Landlords Association. James, you will be the first call on that. Let's do it the other side of the news when I can give you a good run at it. Run those figures past you again. 94% of the rental properties are individuals. 45% roughly have one or two or fewer properties. That is the reality. I am not here to defend Rackman-like landlords. What on earth is that? Look it up, ask your grandparents. Where you're forced to live with rats or mould or whatever it might be, and dangerous boilers. But for the 94% with one, the 45% with two, that is the reality. And all this will do, this is the economics of the madhouse from this government. They think the landlords, all that will happen is, landlords will flog the houses, which helps none of the tenants, and those that are still in there, they will actually increase, because the basic law of economics is, if more properties are sold, fewer are available for rent, they can put up the prices. The Chancellor, really, she does seem to struggle with her sums, doesn't she? 9.15 is the time. We'll have headlines in a moment. But what of this fertility time bomb coming our way? You no longer want to bring up baby. Emily Kate Day is a mum of one, but says that's enough.
You know, we always wanted a big family, and, you know, we made the decision last year perhaps not to try for another one because of financial reasons.
More on that after the 9.15 LBC news headlines from Thomas Watts.
A child is among 10 people killed in Russian strikes on Kyiv overnight. An education minister's told Nick he wouldn't say there is an overdiagnosis of mental health conditions in young people. And a school shooting in Minneapolis is being investigated as an anti-Catholic hate crime. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays of about 3 miles on the M25 anti-clockwise to junction 29 at the A127. It's after an accident that happened earlier. And then also on the M25, there are clockwise queues up to junction 6 at Godson. It was very busy there because a car broke down, but now a lorry's broken down. So one lane is closed again for recovery. Very busy in Bermondsey, the Old Kent Road, the A2 remains closed both ways. And in Keston, the Croydon Road is partially blocked now at West Common Road after an accident, but it's still causing delays in both directions. On the North Circular Road, there are eastbound queues to the Kenninghall Interchange. That's where a van's broken down. And there are severe delays on the Bakerloo and Central Lines.
This is LBC.
Got the tiles?
Got the snacks?
K-W-E-E-N. Queen, 18 points.
That's so not how you spell it, but I'll let you off. My turn.
Snap into the sharing bar that goes with any evening. Kit Kat sharing bars. Crispy Kit Kat wafers with 3 irresistible fillings in hazelnut, salted caramel or double chocolate, covered in thick marbled swirls. Perfect for sharing. Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
I've dealt with many utility companies for many years across several properties, and Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Train to Worthing for scuba training. Yep, we're that family now.
Josh, flippers off until you're in the water, mate.
Well, I look ridiculous, but they're loving it.
Maddie, goggles the other way around, sweetie.
Ah, seats found, kids happy. Heading home. Definitely bringing these wetsuits to our next beach day.
Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Zero, nada, zilch. When Vauxhall say 0%, they mean 0%. 0% APR is available now across the Vauxhall car range, including the all-new Frontera Electric. With a minimum 20% deposit and up to 4 years on offer, what's not to like? And now, for a limited time, get an extra £500 towards your new Vauxhall. Search Vauxhall to find out more. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, £500 contribution on new car orders between 23rd of August to 8th of September 2025. 18 plus, subject to status and availability, T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
James in Norwich will be on the radio in just a moment. Just a couple of emails that are coming in. Are they emails? I'm not sure, actually. Well, certainly the text. I have to shout at someone again about that. I'll check on. Cousin Causton, the man on the radio now saying you should be taxed as if you're working. If that's the case, you should be able to offset all of your expenses for the property against the income, because that's how usual businesses work. There is a lot of anger, actually, about those suggestions that this should happen. Amy says, if you want to tax landlords the same you would on earned income, you'll need to allow us to deduct all our expenses. That is very much the feeling. This from Iris. Has that man on the radio ever tried renting? Rented my mum's flat to pay for her nursing home. Between all the paperwork, repairs, non-paying renters, it was hell. How will this affect new builds? James in Norwich, what's your story here, James? You're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Hello, sir.
Good morning. I agree with everything those previous two texts said, obviously, about the offsetting of the costs, but also... But we're going to end up passing the cost on to the tenants, ultimately. We're going to pass that cost on. But those people rent, the two people in my properties, one of them is a really good friend, and the other tenants have become friends. Mm. You know, I keep the rent reasonable, so they're saving a nest egg to try and buy their own property, get on the ladder. By this, all they're going to do is stump. They're going to stump that ability for them to buy their own property eventually.
So I'm not a landlord, but I have family members or a family member. It seems to me to get tougher and tougher by the year.
The EPC thing's going to be mental. It's going to be an
just explain
crazy
what that. This is the certificate, the environmental certificate you have to get. Is that right?
That's correct. So the government, but that's easy to obtain, obviously. But in 2030, every property is going to have to be a C-rated energy efficiency. So I've got one of my properties is like both of them are fairly new built within the last 10 years. Double glazing, loads of loft insulation. They're 10 years old, Nick. They're fabulous properties, and. Yeah, they're the only ever achieve is a C, because they have to have solar panels. To beat C, you have to have solar panels. So anyone who sort of buys an older property, like a Victorian townhouse, flips it to become a house, it's going to be an absolute nightmare for them to make that into a C-rated property. You're going to go
why
down here, some lovely streets in London, some glorious streets in London, and like where you're going to see an old rental property where someone's had to put double glazing in to try and meet the energy efficiency.
So it's really tough. Why do you keep doing it, lastly, James?
At the moment, there is a financial gain to it. There is a financial, but that's entrepreneurship. Trying to be a business owner is. It's not illegal to make money out of a property.
As I always say, I'm not for the Rachman style, but I am on the side of landlords. Of course, I am.
I've worked really hard to buy those properties. It's not like I've not inherited them or anything. I've worked really hard to buy them, and it seems really unfair that. It's not, everyone looks at people as landlords, as these people who've got these houses as a way of income from not hard work. You know, we're taking this the risk of owning them as well. You know?
James, don't go. Steve in Sutton. Steve, you've not much sympathy for landlords, is that right?
Morning, Nick. I think it's basic economics. I think if the landlords that owned more than one property were taxed heavily and were forced to sell, you'd have an influx of properties onto the housing market, house prices would drop, the tenants now that are forced to rent would then be able to buy.
Well, assuming they could save £50,000, Steve, that's...
Well, they don't need to save £50,000, Nick. If you can buy a basic one-bedroom flat...
All right, okay, let's move out of London. Let's say you've got... I mean, suddenly putting your hands on 15 grand is not easy, Steve.
Well, no, but 15 grand's a lot easier than 50, Nick, and they could spend more than 15 grand in rental in a year.
Well, let's put that to a landlord. You should be taxed even more. James, what would you say to Steve?
Steve, so what happens when, like, your property falls, when the property needs a new roof and stuff, and we've been taxed to a point where we've got no income, the profit's so minimal, it would take 10 years to get even enough profit to replace the roof in 10 years' time, 10 years' worth of rent, might get paid to increase. How much do we take away?
The running costs, Steve, what would you say to James?
Well, the running costs for who? The landlord or the tenant?
So if, God forbid, if the boiler goes in one of James's, I think he's got two properties, or the roof needs repairing, he has to meet that out of his expenditure, obviously.
Sure. So what? How's that relevant to what I just said?
James?
Because, Steve, what you're saying is we should be taxed really heavily. So say for you're decreasing the profit we're going to be earning off each property, so the profit we're going to have to set aside for future repairs is going to be even less. So, the boiler breaks down, oh, really, sorry, unfortunately, we haven't got the money in the kitty to pay for a new boiler at the moment, so you're going to have no boiler. The rental rights, you'll be straight on the phone saying, we've got no boiler, no running hot water, this isn't correct, this isn't wrong.
Okay.
It's not fair.
No, it would force you to sell. And then when you sell, the house goes on the market, more properties come on the market from landlords, and house prices decrease.
Why should he be forced to sell? I thought we lived in the United Kingdom, not North Korea.
Well, we do, Nick, but at the end of the day, our kids can't afford to buy anywhere anymore.
But you seem to think that all these properties... Do you not realise that the ones who can't afford to buy... The rents will simply go up because the stock will be so fewer. There'll be so few.
No, market forces, Nick. They won't go up.
If market forces mean if a lot of landlords like James sell, okay, that means that those who can't afford, and you must acknowledge not everyone will be able to put the cash together for a deposit. If there are fewer properties that are available on the rental market, the landlords who stay in the game will charge more.
Yes, but there'll be more properties on the market for sale, and the house prices will come down.
All right. Do you see that playing out that way, James?
I don't see what he wants me to do. So basically, Nick, I work really hard to buy more things to make more money. So that's the culture we're in. So what this guy's saying is basically not work as hard. There's no point. I've got one house. No. I might as well stop working really hard. Just do a 3-day week, earn enough to put fridge food and beer in the fridge, and stop working. And then that way, I can live in my one house and make sure everyone else is okay.
Most of your tenants are paying rents where they can't afford to put beer and food in the fridge. The landlords that own between two and four properties, they account for 38% of all landlords.
Right.
Those owning five or more properties make up 17% of all landlords.
Well, hang on, where have I put my figures? Individuals make up 94%. I mean, we could blitz everyone with figures here, but let's maybe move on. Be well to both of you. James, good luck with your tenants. Steve, good luck with helping to try and get people into more housing, and we will return to that conversation because I have been keeping a consultant on the line for a long, considerable time to address another story, and it is the fact that we have, well, the headline says, a fertility time bomb. The country's baby crisis is laid bare with fertility rates at their lowest since records began. The rate in England and Wales, so I'm afraid I can't talk of Scotland and Northern Ireland, or the rest of the UK, defined as the average number of live children women would expect to have across their childbearing life has dropped to 1.41 last year. Now, for a population to stay the same size without the effect of immigration, everybody, we need to be at 2.1. Why? Dr. Hippocrates Salis is consultant in reproductive medicine and director of King's Fertility. Initially, doctor, I'm very sorry to have kept you waiting. I hope you're not charging by the minute. And I wonder if you... Good morning. What lies behind this, doctor? Morning, sir.
Good morning. Well, this is something that's been going on for a very long time, and it's been a steady trend. And actually, it's throughout the world. Now, 50% of all the countries around the world have... fertility rates below this 2.1 replacement level. And it's quite complex. Some of them are easy to understand, like women's empowerment and increased access to education and employment for women is a very major factor, and also the desire to have fewer children and to delay childbearing. Of course, it's improved contraception, so there's the ability to have effective contraception, not have children when you don't want to. And there's also lower infant mortality, so more children survive to adulthood, so then you require fewer younger children to when you're when you're a family to be able to have a children later on. But it's important also to say there's a lot of socioeconomic factors and concerns about cost of living, housing prices, and job insecurity. So it's a very complex and wide-ranging a basket of reasons why this is happening.
Doctor, the headline uses the expression time bomb. Bomb is not a good thing. How concerned should we be?
Well, it's not a time bomb in the sense, you know, still the world population is increasing because there's so many people. And of course, the mortality rate has changed the fact that we live longer as well. But what that is leading to is an aging population as the fertility rates fall and the life expectancy increases. So therefore, the proportion of elderly people increases compared to younger people that can, of course, work and pay taxes and be part of society. So that has a lot of economic effects with the shifting of the workforce. And of course, we're very much aware of that in the UK with issues in our pensions. And of course, the thing with shifting demographics is because there's a patchwork around the world of which countries have increased population versus decreasing population. You see immigration, and you just mentioned it before. So, of course, immigration becomes a critical factor for offsetting this population decline. So this is why it's going to be a shift in how we live, really, over the next sort of 50 to 100 years, rather than, you know, there'll be no more humans on the planet.
Lastly, in tandem with this, Doctor, do you find yourself seeing more older first-time mums?
Absolutely. So what we've seen in the UK, even in natural pregnancies, the average age now is 29 years. That was 26 only in 2000, so 25 years ago. We see that the average age of the second-time mom is now 33. And in the UK, in my field of fertility, the average age of the women having treatment is over 35. And what that leads to, it's not necessarily that we only have fewer children because we want to have fewer children. It's also what's called the fertility gap, which is basically a disparity between the number of children that people actually desire to have and how many they will have because they leave it later. And of course, it becomes more difficult to have children later on in life as well.
I must let you get to your patients. I'm sorry if I've disrupted your morning plans. Thank you for holding on the line. Dr. Hippocrates Saris is a consultant in reproductive medicine and Director of King's Fertility. Calls coming in on this. Lucy, let's do it the other side of the news. I really want to hear your story. A lot of landlords and tenants getting involved. But I take you back to May, when Stuart in Rochester told us about his four-year-old daughter, Eleanor, receiving treatment for B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
My wife and daughter are live-in patients until hopefully September, when we get to ring the bell. And I commute daily from Rochester to Sutton.
Every day.
Every day. I want to be there. I need to be there.
Well, why wouldn't you as a dad? Well, you didn't have to wait till September because we're still in August.
Treatment is done, this course is run, and you are on your way.
You had to have a hard heart to get through that one. I think tissues possibly at the ready. It's a heartwarming story, and it'll be after the news. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. News time, Thomas Watts.
At least 13 people have been killed in major Russian strikes on Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, overnight. President Zelensky says Moscow is choosing ballistics instead of the negotiating table. An education minister has pushed back against claims young people are being overdiagnosed with mental health conditions. The former health secretary, Sir Jeremy Hunt, has warned society has lost sight of the reality that child development is messy. The row over the use of a hotel in Essex to house asylum seekers is set to continue in the courts this morning. The Home Office and the owner of the site in Essex are seeking to challenge a High Court injunction. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many. The rain heavy and thundery at times with the possibility of hail. A high of 23 degrees.
This is LBC.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Would anyone like some Bourneville dark chocolate?
Is it so dark the aftertaste lasts for a week?
No.
Does it taste really, really complicated?
What?
Is it saturated in nibs?
So dark it comes with a therapist?
To the uneducated palate, does it taste like burnt tyre?
Would scientists compare the taste to dark matter?
Is it artisanal, in all caps?
Are the tasting notes gloom?
No, no pretentiousness, no complexity, no bitterness. Just smooth dark chocolate from Cadbury.
Cadbury Bourneville. Made to be enjoyed, not endured.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much glitter?
Yep, lost them. God, I offered to get drinks on my own.
It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and Cat. Oh, there they are. Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's pick up on this idea of this drop in birth rates, the lowest since records began. That, I think whenever you hear that, as a journalist now of some years, that always jumps off the page, or if you're listening to it, really hits you, doesn't it? Lucy's in Tavistock. Now, this is, we're talking about you, so you are a mum.
No, I have not got kids. I'm 28, married to a 32-year-old, and we've chosen not to have children. We've got a two-bed house, but the space of a two-bed house also these days... It's just not big enough to live, and we spend so much money on food and stuff each month. We don't think we have the money to spare for a child.
You're right in the, please don't think I'm being offensive, the sweet spot being 28. You're right there, as we were just hearing from the doctor. It is about now that I would imagine many of your girlfriends are getting pregnant. How, when you get a phone call from another, you know, from Sandra or Becky or Lucy, or another, hey, guess what, I'm pregnant! What goes through your heart?
I sort of wish it was a puppy.
You wish it was a what?
A puppy or a cat, not a baby.
Right. Do you have nieces and nephews?
No.
I'm going to ask you a question here. Do you like children?
Yeah, they're okay. But I look at a child and I think, how much them clothes cost to put it in, you know.
Sorry, the line, you look at a child and you think, how much is it going to cost, did you say?
Yeah, so even like to dress your child, I look at what it's wearing, I think, okay. You know, that's £8.
Yeah, sure. When you were, I don't know, in your early teens, mid-teens, did you think, oh, yeah, I want to have babies? Or did you always think, you know what, I don't really get the appeal of being a mum?
I think I had quite a good childhood. I mean, we went to Disneyland like 8 times before I was 8, and my parents always bang on about that. And
you went to Disneyland 8? You went there more than Mickey Mouse?
I did, yeah. I had all the signature books and everything. But, yeah, I just don't... The childhood I would be able to give my child and Warren... still be able to work, make an income. I'm self-employed, so obviously that doesn't help,
okay. Did you say boyfriend or partner, husband, which was
husband. Married,
and he's totally relaxed.
Yeah, he's got the spare room in his games room, so
he's got the spare room in his games room. Okay, so he's happy as Larry. Do you have siblings?
Yes, an older brother.
Yeah. And he's neither had any children yet, if you've not got any nieces or nephews.
No, he's in a one-bed flat as well with a mortgage, and he just can't warrant the cost of having a child.
And lastly, your girlfriends, when you say that, when you go out for coffee or wine or whatever you want to do, do a lot of them say the same sort of thing? You know, Lucy, I don't know that I want to have babies either. Do they say the same?
Well, we're all enjoying ourselves out for a glass of wine, so a child there would be...
I suppose you've seen through what I was saying there, Lucy. Good luck. Be well, thank you, and I wish you well, and if you were to change your mind, I wish you well, whatever it might be. Thanks, Lucy. Now, someone who did have some children is to the next call, because it was at the end of April, King Charles issued a message to those, like him, who were suffering with cancer. He urged fellow patients to live with, do you remember, rebellious hope, like the late Deborah James, indeed Dame Deborah, the bowel cancer campaigner, who died in 2022. Now, it was the following day, May Day, actually, we had a discussion on the show about what it's like to live with cancer. And we took this call. It was Stuart in Rochester, Kent, talking about his 4-year-old daughter, Eleanor.
So when you hear your daughter has cancer at 4 years old...
How long? How old, sorry?
So she's currently 4. And a room full of heroes is the only way I can describe these children on this ward. So she's got B-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is something that I didn't know 3-4 weeks ago.
No.
And we're lucky, you know, we're curable. We are 6 months of very intense chemo, but there are some children on the ward that aren't so lucky. My wife and daughter are live-in patients until hopefully September, when we get to ring the bell. And I commute daily from Rochester to Sutton.
Every day.
Every day. I want to be there. I need to be there.
Wow. What's it going to be like when you ring that bell?
We have many trips planned. We've been sensible our whole lives, thinking, well, in retirement, we'll do X, Y, and Z. And now we're thinking, once we ring that bell, We're going to go on so many different trips and holidays and experiences and just make the most of every single day.
Well, you can imagine the joy among the team when Stuart got back in touch to tell us that Eleanor would be ringing the bell, and it was last week. A touch earlier, of course, that we heard than planned. Well, we made sure we were there. LBC's reporter Emma Corr joined the family at the Royal Marsden Hotel in Sutton and subsequently filed this report.
Your treatment is done, this course is run, and you are on your way.
The moment four-year-old Eleanor's family had been waiting for. Diagnosed in March with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, enduring intense rounds of chemotherapy and long hospital stays, her dad, Stuart, elated to finally be here.
I think it means not only a lot to us, but a lot to Eleanor. You know, we've been very upfront with her that she's poorly. So she knows and she can explain and she can understand that she's on all these different medicines. So throughout the process, we've walked past the bell and we said, when your treatment's finished, we'll be here. And very early on, I took a picture and I said, this is the new life goal. The new short-term life goal is to ring this bell.
Right, so we've got this open for everyone then.
Eleanor's mum, Amy, says the past few months have been incredibly hard, but is now full of hope.
She not only is beating cancer, but she's beating it with grace, with vigour, with resilience that is far beyond the years of a four-year-old.
The bell ringing ceremony is now a tradition in hospitals like this, a celebration of strength and survival. And for Eleanor, it marks a new chapter.
We are starting to look at time away as a family in a controlled, safe way. So to have that long weekend away together or a week together, we really are just looking to make every day count.
Emma Corr reporting, and Dad Stuart from Rochester joins me now. Seychelles, Disney World, where are you, Stuart? Can you hear me? Over.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I can hear you. Unfortunately, not as glamorous just yet because we're still immunocompromised, but we have bought a caravan.
Oh, fantastic, man. Well done. Where are you going to take it, Stuart?
So we're looking at the southwest initially, down to Dawlish, just for some time away.
Brilliant. How is she?
She's doing really well, thank you. Energy levels have started to come back up, and just having no tubes in, so she had a feeding tube and a Hickman line, but she now, although her hair is growing back, that was never what bothered her. It was just having the tubes in, and now she doesn't feel different anymore. You know, she's just a normal four-year-old that starts limited school on the 1st of September.
Yeah, of course. She sounds a smashing kid. The nursing staff saying there that she's, you know, goes above and beyond, really, Stuart.
Do you know what? Again, she just wanted a little bit of control, so pushing her own medicines and just understanding and getting involved in everything.
Yeah, yeah. What do you want to say to the staff down there at the hospital?
Just thank you. You know, I gave a short speech to the nursing staff, the catering staff, the play team, everybody that got us through and made every day a distraction and just pushed through. So just thank you to everybody.
Lastly, have you ever heard a sound as sweet as when your daughter rang that bell, Stuart?
No, and I think I even got emotional just then, Nick, so hearing it all back again, you know, it's just a journey that became part of life now, and we wish everybody on the ward and everybody that may be on the ward in the future every success.
Thanks for letting us be a part of it. The listeners have, I don't know if I can say thoroughly enjoyed it, but they've certainly picked up on the what you have been through. Stuart, hey, safe caravanning, if there is such a word. If not, I've just invented it. Safe caravanning, sport.
Thanks, Nick. Take care. Thank you.
Take it easy, buddy. Lots of love to Eleanor. Stuart in Rochester. Lovely to bring to conclusion a good story. We don't do enough of that. Should we talk landlords and this brilliant idea, dear Lord, by the Chancellor? So we're going to, we can't raise tax on working men and women, so what we'll do is we'll go after landlords because they're all so greedy and rapacious. I want you to spell that 25 times in your homework book. Rapacious, spell it as it sounds. But they don't realise, they'll just pass on the increases. Rob, in North Wales, this Labour government is a cruel government. A tax on landlords and an indirect tax on tenants, because as a landlord, I can assure you, any tax I have to pay will be passed on to my tenants. Sharm in Buckinghamshire, this idea that all these landlords make all this money. Would a landlord benefit from statutory maternity pay if they make NI contributions? I think not. Michael's in Sittingbourne, Kent. Michael, what do you want to say to this? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Nice to talk to you again. A lot of these people criticising landlords, in my view, it's just the politics of envy.
I'm a good landlord,
Nick. I know you probably think I'm blowing my own trumpet, but I really am. I don't charge the full market rent.
Mm-hmm.
When anything goes wrong, my tenants have only got to give me a ring and I get it done. In one occasion, they had some water dripping. I got a plumber around.
They had to have some what done? Sorry, some what? What doing?
I There was some water dripping through a seat.
Water dripping, right, OK.
Yeah,
yep.
I thought that sounds fun. Anyway, I got the plumber around there in 7 minutes to
good
sort
Lord.
It out. We had another recent. We've had some terrible tenants. One tenant still owes me £5,000, right. And we will pursue him for it. We really will.
Yeah.
But the current tenants we have are absolutely lovely. Now, to give you an example, these have been in our house for, 2 years now, and they have been lovely. They think we're kind and gentle, which I think is quite nice.
Mm.
And when they phoned me up, they said there was a couple of the thermostatic Lego valves were stuck. Don't worry, I'll get it sorted.
Right.
So we have a contact. We phoned up our plumber, went round there. Within a couple of days, he went round there. And he phoned me up and said, there are some other ones that are sticking as well. I said, do it. Don't hesitate, just do it.
Right, okay.
So anything that needs doing.
How many properties do you rent out, Michael?
I just have one.
What will you do if the Chancellor does decide to go and put NI on your rental? What will you do?
Sell.
You see, there
we go. We'd have to ask the tenants to leave. I mean, we would. I mean, we've actually had to evict one tenant, who when he was evicted just walked out and left all his furniture, all his clothes and everything. It took us 3 weeks to get his rubbish out.
Well, that is the reality of it. Michael, stay in touch. Well done for being such a good landlord. That, I think, is the reality of most, not all, but most. Paul is in Oswell Twistle. Good morning, Paul.
Hello, Nick.
Yes.
Yeah, I've got some suggestions.
Ah, good.
Because Rachel Reeves could take money from other sources.
Right.
Do you realise that the banks are making huge, huge profits?
Right.
Why not take $10 billion off them?
Well,
or
why would you want to tax success? What does that say about a country?
Because it's fairer than taking off the poor of the country,
I agree, and I don't want to tax the poor, but I ask you again, what look does that make for a country that wants to tax success? All that will happen is, and by the way, this is happening under this Labour government, successful businessmen and women think, there's no way I'm going to base my business in the UK. I'll go to Italy, or I'll go to Ireland, or I'll go to Dubai. It's not a good look.
I agree to some extent, but I want a fairer society. Right. I really do. I mean, the inequality in this country is absolutely obscene.
But you just heard the reality. Michael in Sittingbourne, he lives in one house, he has one other, he's renting it out, he makes sure all the repairs are done on time, he charges below market rate, the tenants are virtually like friends, but if she goes ahead with this, he'll flog it, and those tenants will have to go, and by the way, there will be fewer properties. The market dynamics, the law of economics, means rental will go up. Paul, this is madness. This is economic madness.
That's why I'm suggesting taking it off the banks who can afford it.
Well, I don't think so, because we shouldn't be a country. So when a company doesn't make money, does the government then help bail it out?
If it'll save jobs, yeah, because wow. I'm all in favour of keeping people into jobs.
All right. Paul, it's an interesting idea. I'm afraid I'm going to have to disagree with you, but disagree on that, disagreed apart. Let's disagree agreeably. That's what we're going to do. Paul, be well. More calls on this. 9:46, LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
Officials in Ukraine say 13 people have been killed in major Russian strikes on Kyiv overnight. A minister has pushed back against claims young people are being overdiagnosed with mental health conditions. And the row over the use of a hotel in Epping to house asylum seekers is set to return to the courts this morning. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many, a high of 23 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The A12 is closed southbound between junctions 19 at the Boreham Interchange and 17 at Howe Green. And that's all down to an accident, and there are severe delays on the approach. In Bermondsey, the A2 Old Kent Road remains closed in both directions. Those investigation works are still taking place after the accident late last night. Then all circular roads very busy eastbound to the Kenning Hall Interchange. It's after a van broke down earlier, but that's finally been recovered. Gatwick Express services aren't running between Victoria and Brighton. It's all down to some safety checks, which also means that Great Western Railway aren't running between Redhill and Gatwick Airport, and there are delays on Thameslink services via St Pancras.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James Cleverly.
My colleague Jeremy Hunt says children and young people are being overdiagnosed with mental health conditions. How have we got here, and what needs to change?
James Cleverly on LBC.
Tesco Finest Cod. A different kettle of fish. Pan-fried with garlic, slowly baked in butter, or finished with a squeeze of lemon. It'll get you hooked either way. It's why only the finest cuts of wild-caught cod are selected for our delicate and flaky cod loins. Mm. Make your everyday taste better with Tesco Finest. Majority of larger stores excludes Northern Ireland.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Just because you can't see something doesn't mean it isn't there. You can't hold this in your hand or pack it in your bags. You can't touch it. But our network is around you. Like oxygen. Near or far, we're there. That's why we've been awarded Best Mobile Network Coverage by Uswitch. O2. Essential for living.
Based on Open Signal Awards, UK Mobile Network Experience Report, September 2024 to verify see opensignal.com/UK Mobile Report.
The Virgin Atlantic Holiday Sale is now on. This is your sign to taste Jamaican jerk chicken so good it brings a tear to your eye. Catch a New York basement gig worth the 10-block detour. Or hit the dunes in Dubai and find sand in your pockets for weeks. Seize the sale. Book in store or online at Virgin Atlantic Holidays. Selected routes. For T's and C's, visit virginatlantic.com.
Many dentists refer their own patients on to Darwood and Tanner.
My name is Dr. Mark Kent. I'm a general dental practitioner practicing in a North London suburb. Darwood and Tanner have become my preferred referral practice. I feel that Dr. Andrew Darwood can provide the highest level of implant surgery that is available, together with giving my patients the option of alternative specialist treatments.
Download your information pack today. Search Darwood and Tanner. Your smile is our healthy obsession.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, love. Just spoke to Zara from St. James's Place.
Your financial advisor?
Yeah, we've made a plan. Retire early, travel more. Peru first.
Ooh, ¿cómo estás?
Bless you. And Zara's plan means I can help more with your house deposit.
Thanks again, Dad.
Planning for the future calls for invaluable advice. Visit St. James's Place to find your one-to-one financial advisor. St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. SJP approved 19th of Feb 25.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
War on landlords. I don't know if the Chancellor realises what she might set off here, because the amount of response coming into us is extraordinary. Let's get straight back to those calls. Jennifer's in Dorset. Jennifer, you're not a landlord, but you work in a related area. Is that right?
No, I am a landlord.
Oh, you are a landlord. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. As well as being an accountant who specialises in property tax. I write articles and books on property tax.
Oh, right.
And
do we get your last name? I don't have to have your last name, but do you want to tell us your last name?
Okay, Adams.
Jennifer Adams. And there are books that you've done on this that are available.
Yes, okay. Yes, as well. I'm a landlord as well. My clients are beginning to sell. Many of them only have one or two properties.
Yeah.
And they really don't make as much as if they get their calculator out now and they think, oh, the grief is just not worth it.
And what is the grief? What is the straw that is breaking a number of the backs of the camels?
I think it's the tenants as well. When they leave, many of them... they don't really, it's not their house, therefore they don't really care. I've just had a tenant leave. She was supposed to stay until November. She just decided she was going to leave, or her boyfriend did. And when we went over there, we do checkups and everything.
Mm.
In the end, I had to get someone round to do the garden, and I had 11 black plastic bags of weeds and things like that. Large bags.
Oh,
it was
like
massive.
The builder's
they were massive.
Bags that come
like
with
the builder's
the
had. I had to get
in.
Someone to go and do it. You suppose that's a minor thing. And then my husband's got a property. He walked in and the smell of cats, although we allow cats obviously and dogs, we're now underneath the new rules, we cannot not have them. That's right, isn't it? You cannot not have them.
Well,
anymore.
No, the other way. So you're forced. You're mandated to have them. So,
you
if you have a property, you have to let it to someone. Someone, even if you don't want to have cats in your house.
No, no, it's the new law that's coming in September, isn't it?
I don't know.
It's a new one. Is that you can't say on your advert no dogs or cats. You can't say that anymore. Oh, yeah, there's all this new tenant law. Anyway, with my clients, not many of them make profit. And the main one was George Osborne's tax of the way that
now,
they
did it. Now, this was the change
there.
On... there was an allowance you could have, as I recall, wasn't there, that you could write off part of this rental on certain tax issues?
Well, it was the mortgage.
It was the mortgage.
Where normally, before George Osborne came along, you'd be able to offset the whole of your interest against the rental income, you see. But after that, you were only allowed to offset 20% as a tax credit. So if you were a 40%er, you wouldn't get 40%, you'd get 20%. Right. And that started to make the upset going through.
Let me just tell you what's coming in as we're talking, Jennifer. Oscar says, rich people moaning again, get over yourselves. Paul says, oh, I'm in tears, I've got my tiny violin out. How would you respond to those people?
Many of my clients are accidental landlords. I've got one particular client who is who's with her boyfriend, and she said to me, I don't know whether the relationship's going to last. I've had problems before. I'm going to rent out my property and go and live with my partner. Fine. So she's an accidental landlord. When we get to the end of the year, I said to her, what are you going to do? Still rent it? She said, I can't, because it's just financially not worth it. If you took that money, sold the property and put it in a building society, you'd get more interest, you see? And also, you wouldn't have the grief. And if you have a look at the new law that's coming in, the tenants' law, it's very, very, very much on the way of the tenants, I'm afraid.
Jennifer, I will finish to get more people involved. Let us know how you get on, and thanks for your input, working as both a landlord and as an accountant working with landlords. And check out your name, Jennifer Adams. You have books on this area. Jennifer, thank you. Harry's in Brentwood. Now, you're a landlord, I have a note. Is that right? Morning.
Yeah, that's correct. We've got 14 properties.
Ah, now that's...
I'm also a letting agent as well.
Right. So what is the reality as you see it? What will happen in this sector if the Chancellor goes ahead with this?
It's just an additional pressure on landlords' profit. So since the Section 24, as Jennifer touched on, that's not being able to offset your mortgage interest relief, landlords have been exiting the market more than have been coming in. So we've had a drop in supply since 2016. This is just another factor where a landlord's going to sell. Because of the increased stamp duty for second homes, typically landlords aren't buying that property that's on the market. It's going to first-time buyers, which is what the government wants. So what we're finding is a good tenant sitting in your property is a great thing to have. And you don't really want to maximise the rent on them and push them out. You want to keep them in. So you typically keep your rent below market level for those good tenants. Because the profit is being reduced by this mortgage interest not being able to be offset and national insurance now, well, potentially, you're forced to increase that rent to market level. So that's putting an upward pressure on rents. So there's two factors. The lack of supply is pushing rents up.
Yeah.
And now also the government is forcing landlords to push rents up.
But this will only get worse, surely. If they were to go ahead with this NI, this will just make a bad situation even worse, surely.
100%. So the landlords that stick it out will find rents rising, and there will become an equilibrium in the future. Property prices may come down, but rents are certainly going to be going up. Because more landlords are leaving, it's 100% going to make it worse for tenants.
So more are leaving. How often are people starting out in this industry? I tell you what I want to do, Harry. I want to get into the letting business. How often does that happen?
It's happening less and less. My sister-in-law, she's got a small terraced house. She wanted to rent it out. But she's met a new partner. They're going to buy a big home.
Mm.
And the additional stamp duty on that big home, because she wanted to keep that terrace house, is £70,000. Just the additional stamp duty. As much as I want her to rent it out, I think property is a great investment. I see that property is never going to earn back.
No.
Just that additional stamp duty. So they are stopping landlords coming into the market. But I think that feels like what they want to do. It feels like there's a lot of build to rent now by commercial companies, funds, pension funds. And it does feel like that's where they want the private rented sector to go. So.
Good luck with the work you're doing, Harry. Thank you. Jeff in Bishop Stortford. Jeff, you're a landlord, is that right?
Yes, I had a pension fund money when I left my work in the Middle East, mm-hmm. and I invested it in two apartments in Manchester.
Right.
I had to get a buy-to-let mortgage. So yes. They're more heavily mortgaged because I didn't have lots of money. I put in a substantial amount, but mortgages to cover it. The rent at the moment, after I've paid the mortgage and the fees for the rental agency, I make £150 a month profit.
What, on each on each
apartment, £150 a month profit. After that, I've now got to pay the £4,600 a month fees for the apartment block, because they're decent apartments.
Mm.
So that's another £400 a month. So say £350 a month. I'm going to make it, at the moment, I make a £200 loss every month on each apartment.
Why do you do it?
I do it because I want my money invested securely.
Right.
I have a fund.
But wouldn't you do better to get an ISA or, I don't know, whatever it might be, possibly?
Yes, but it won't earn me that same level of return.
Right.
Because I need to have that return so that eventually I can hand the property over to my family who will do what they want with it. It's got a large mortgage on it, which they'll have to sort out the debt. That's not my problem. I'm only paying interest-only mortgage. But the problem is, if they put the rents up, I'm going to have the. So if they put the national insurance up, I'm going to have to put up. I'm going to have to put up the rent.
And this is what I don't think they've realised, Jeff. Thank you. You had the last word. Apologies to Mark, to Matt, to David, and others. I'm done for another day. James Cleverly is the other side of the news here on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thanks, Nick. You're listening to me, James Cleverly, standing in for James O'Brien until 1 o'clock. The German cabinet has just passed a voluntary military service bill, increasing the size of their armed forces, but also opening the door for conscription down the line. So, would you volunteer to fight for Britain? And if not, why not? The birth rate in England and Wales has dropped to a new record low. So, have you postponed parenthood? But first, my colleague Jeremy Hunt says children and young people are being overdiagnosed with mental health conditions, losing sight of the reality that child development is, in the words of the report, messy and uneven. So have we ended up limiting what it means to be normal in a desire to be tolerant, and what needs to change?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, three children are among at least 14 people killed in a huge Russian attack on Kyiv overnight. Officials in Ukraine say dozens more civilians are injured after apartment blocks were hit by hundreds of drones and missiles. It's the largest such attack since Vladimir Putin's talks with Donald Trump in Alaska. Olena Halushka, co-founder of the International Center for Ukrainian Victory, spent the night in shelter.
On one hand, they are pretending that they are engaging in the peace talks. You know, that Russians are talking to President Trump. We are listening and hearing from President Trump for actually the last half a year, that two more weeks and then there might be sanctions. But simultaneously, Russians are doing nothing except killing Ukrainians.
Judges are due to hear the latest stage of a row over the use of a hotel in Essex to house asylum seekers. The Home Office and the owner of the site in Epping are seeking to overturn a High Court injunction granted last week. LBC's Shivani Sharma has more from the Court of Appeal.
The council's lawyer managed to successfully get a temporary interim injunction last week by arguing that the Bell Hotel owners didn't have the right planning permission to house asylum seekers. But the owner and the Home Office will be looking to overturn this today. And the pressure on government is significant, with the deadline for it to remove asylum seekers from that hotel just over 2 weeks away.
Sir Jeremy Hunt has backed calls to radically reform special educational needs in England's schools. The former health secretary's warned of an overdiagnosis of mental health conditions. He's used the foreword of a policy exchange report to warn society has lost sight of the realities of child development. Landlords could face a tax hike in Rachel Reeves' budget this autumn. Treasury officials are reportedly looking at levying national insurance on rental income to raise about £2 billion. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM.
which a lot of people have said will just lead to people selling up and getting out of the market, to which some people have said, fine, good, put those properties back on the market. But it just goes to show, I think, the extent to which this government is getting increasingly desperate in its search for money.
The Treasury says it's committed to keeping taxes for working people as low as possible. The director of the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has been sacked. Susan Menares's departure from the CDC follows growing tensions over vaccine policies and public health directives. The White House says she wasn't aligned with the president's agenda of making America healthy again. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 92.26. That is down 29. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.16. LBC weather, sunshine and scattered showers for many places. The rain will be heavy and quite thundery at times with the possibility of some hail. A high of 23 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Get the new Google Pixel 10 Pro on EE and save a huge £544. And talk to Gemini about anything you see.
Like reorganizing my living room.
Exactly.
Or helping us decide which top to wear with me jeans.
Yep, that too.
What about my old phone?
Trade in and save even more. All on the UK's best network. No wonder tech lovers are choosing EE.
Introductory offer ends 15th of September. Trading discount dependent on device. Savings across contract. Eligibility credit check and terms apply. Credit by EE Limited. Verify best network at ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James Cleverly.
Good morning. You're listening to me, James Cleverly, standing in for James O'Brien on LBC until 1 o'clock today. Later on this morning, I am going to be talking about a couple of issues which are in the news, including the falling birth rate, people not having as many children as they used to. And I'm also going to be talking about the German cabinet's move to increase the number of people volunteering for the German armed forces. And I want to find out whether that's something that you'd be willing to do here in Britain, volunteer to fight for the country. But the first thing that I want to talk about this morning is a report that's come out from a think tank, which has been forwarded by my good friend and colleague, Jeremy Hunt. And the report basically says that we are over-diagnosing young people with regard to their mental health. And Jeremy's argument is that a young person's development is messy, it's complicated, it's difficult, and it always has been. But what we're doing is we are medicalizing the normality of childhood. We're giving a diagnosis that's leading to an EHCP, which for many of you, you'll know that is the certificate which basically enables greater support at school for young people. And this is all well-intentioned and it's done for the right reasons. But ultimately, it is creating a real limit on just natural and normal childhood. And it is creating an unsustainable pressure on the public purse. And I've been thinking a lot about this. I've got two boys. They grew up in the way that I would expect boys to be, rough and tumble. They weren't always the most focused, sometimes easily distracted. They needed to burn off energy. And for me, that was the normal part of childhood. But I could easily have seen how, looked at it from a different angle, my kids could have been seen as not being as attentive as they needed to be at school. But would it have been right to have that as a diagnosis? Would that have helped them? Would it have helped the school? Would it have helped me as a parent? Or would it have painted them into a corner, defined them in a certain way, and perhaps influenced their future behaviour? I want to find out what you think about this issue, whether we are over-diagnosing children, because I think we are. And I think that it is, as I say, driven by good intentions, but ultimately what it's doing is really narrowing the definition of a normal childhood. And in doing so, we are making more young people, more children, feel as if they are not normal, as if they are something different. And I think that in itself can have perhaps a stigmatizing effect. Now, I'm not suggesting that no children need help. Of course, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is the kids that really need help should get help, but the children, the young people who should be able to just, you know, graze their knees, run about, burn off energy, should be allowed to do so in the way that I think we have done for most of human history. And I'm not the only person that thinks that. On Nick's show earlier on this morning, Jane Harris, who's from a disabled children's charity, and she's an expert in speech and language, she said to Nick that she disagrees with some of the report's findings about overdiagnosis, but she did agree that there has been a narrowing of what is considered normal childhood behaviour. Let's listen to what she told Nick earlier this morning.
An EHCP usually is requested by a school because they, or a nursery, because they know that a child is struggling and they know they don't have the expertise and resources to help that child. So the key point is that if schools were run in a different way, some of those children might not need an EHCP, right? If we had schools that actually worked in a way that supported these children, one of the things that's happened in our schools over the last 10, 15 years is they've become more and more rigid. So there's kind of rules in schools now, like you can't, you know, use a ball in the playground. There's rules in schools like, you know, children all the time have to keep their eyes on the teachers. Well, an autistic child couldn't do that. 50 years ago, a child like that might have coped in school and might never, some of those children, not all of them, some of them would absolutely have always need an EHCB, but some of them would have coped. But it's that we've changed the culture of schools to a point that more and more children need something different from what our schools are giving them.
So do these children need more opportunities to burn off energy? Do we need to recognise that not all children learn in the same way? I think we've always known this, but do we need to formally recognise it within school structures? Have we created an environment where children are being so constrained, so boxed in, so tightly defined that they can't be their natural